Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
No, Kenny, these are my spicy hot Louisiana baked chicken tenders. No, Kenny!
Someday I will collect all the Chimpokemon, then I will fight the evil power that will reveal itself once all the Chimpokemon are collected. Oh.
No, Kitty, you can't have these chicken tenders because they are mine and I keep mine to myself.
Be sure to tune in tomorrow for another inexplicable episode of Chimpokomon.
Hooray!
Hey, kids, do you love Chimpokomon?
Yes.
Well, now you can buy your very own. I've got to buy Chimpokomon. I've got to buy it. I've got to buy it.
Now you can collect them all. Furry cat, donkey trunk, penguin, shoe, lamb toy. Collect them all and you can become Royal Crown Chimpokomaster.
Royal Crown Chimpokomaster? Holy shit!
All the Chimpokomon are in stores now.
Chimpokomon is super you love toy number one.
Got to buy it, Chimpokomon!
Mom! 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 Seriously! This is a toy store, Mom! No! Must go! Toy store!
Eric, calm down!
Seriously! Mom! Must go! Must buy!
What is it, Eric?
Mom, I've only just heard. They're making Chimpokomon dolls, Mom. You can collect them all. You can collect them all, Mother. Quick, we must get to the toy store.
I'm making us some lunch right now, Eric.
But, Mom, I have to get a Chimpokomon doll before everybody else does, because then I'll be cute.
Can't it wait till tomorrow, hon?
But, Mom, I have to get the first one, and people won't think I'm cute.
All right, let's go.
Sweet. Everybody's gonna be so jealous when they see my Chimpokomon.
I will, Chimpokomon.
Oh, God damn it!
Hey, badass.
Hey, oh, I guess you saw the commercial, too.
Yep,
I got Roostor, Lamtron, and Shoo. Well, that's nice, but I'm gonna get a Penguin. He's the cutest. God damn it, there's no more Penguin! Kenny, Penguin is my favorite. That's the last one. Let me have it.
Meh.
Meh, Kenny, let me have... Meh. Meh, give me Penguin.
Why, hello, everyone. Hello, Dawn.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm good.
Dream anything creepy last night? You can tell me. It's okay.
I dreamed that I gave Mike Russell a birthday present that was a empty pizza box that I filled with pudding.
That's right. We talked about that last time. Nothing beyond that.
Nothing else nothing you want to contribute? Creepier than that.
Really?
Nope.
Okay. Is that answer going to change if I ask you in 5 or 10 minutes?
No.
Is it going to come flooding back to you, or are you going to realize that there's something you're holding back right now that the people need to know about?
I wonder if maybe my fear of dreaming something creepy might be part of why I found it so hard to get to sleep last night. Because I really got very little sleep last night, because I went to sleep, then I slept for about an hour, then I woke up and it was like, can't sleep anymore. And then I was up until like 3 or 4
staring
o'clock.
At the ceiling, just sitting there like the kid in Dreamscape, afraid to fall asleep for fear that the reptile man or your dad would appear.
Looking over and seeing the clown sitting in the chair, and then I put it under the bed, and then the scary tree outside my window.
All right. Hey, here, just for the record, by the way, I should say this because there's been a lot of discussion the last few days, most of it prompted by me, about Patrick and whether or not he... did you say that people are now just tagging pictures of... Are they tagging pictures of me as Patrick or Patrick as me?
It was a picture of Patrick, and somebody tagged it as being you.
That's wonderful. He just stopped by the studio just now, and he brought you, I believe, a Vizo, a crisp, tasty, refreshing caffeinated beverage. And I got to say, I mean, really, all kidding aside, that just as he was standing in the studio just now, I mean, just sort of looking at him, just, you know, this is sort of the normal course of events, I don't see the resemblance.
It was just that one picture. It was the angle of his face and... The fact that he had his sunglasses on.
I think there's
glasses.
A certain way that he might pose or be positioned in which you could see that there's some sort of... That our features are... how do I put this? That we came from the same part of central casting, but I don't really know that that we're that similar as such.
No, you both have the features that I personally, as I said before, find pleasing. You know, you got kind of high foreheads. You've got prominent noses. You know, but
nice
other,
to put it that
other
way.
Than that, you don't really look alike.
Is prominent how we say, is prominent just code for huge? It's okay. I'm not going to take offense. I'm just curious.
Large. Large nose.
But, I mean, you know, larger than average.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they used to describe...
I believe you're aware of the fact that you have a...
I'm not going to take offense. We're all adults here. I'm just asking if that's code for big. I don't care. The only reason I ask is because there was this girl named Lori Maddox. And some of the music fans in the house. And if a Jesus in the OC, who this week is Jesus in Paris, if he were listening right now, he'd know exactly what I was talking about. Lori Maddox was this girl that Jimmy Page dated when she... She was like 13 and with the rainbow, and I think he had her kidnapped and brought back to his hotel room, and then there was the sexing. I swear to God, and she goes back to his hotel room at the rainbow, and he's sitting there in a darkened hotel room just surrounded by skulls with candles on top of them. And he's all, hello there, take off your pants. And she's, it's okay. You know, it was all very romantic.
Delighted by that.
Anyway, but they described her as being, the biographer Stephen Davis described her as being, because she was a model. She was a teen model, and he described her as being a teen model with prominent features and giant eyes. So I don't really know, and I always...
It just sounds like everything's bulging off of her head.
She's a Bratz doll. There's elbows and ears and noses and hips just blah, everywhere. I remember reading that biography when I was a young man and just thinking, prominent features? Is he talking about boobies? And I was just sort of, but I was unclear. I didn't quite know what he was referring to. But she's a model, so, you know, that could be the case. I just didn't know.
Yeah, but she's a model, so it's unlikely, because most models don't have huge boobies.
Yeah, it's all very, anyway. She kind of looked like Bianca Jagger, and that was good enough for me. Yeah. It was good enough for my teenage mind, Don.
So I guess prominent features basically means she had a wide mouth. Probably.
Well, she would almost have to, I would think. Hey, no.
I don't really know the details about Jimmy Page.
No, I think it's more of a Robert Plant thing. Apparently, he was just a
gifted.
It was just a Louisville slugger down there. I'm sorry to everybody.
Like an Evian bottle, like Janice Dickinson said of Liam Neeson.
Did she say that about Liam? I'm so sorry to everybody, by the way. And by everybody, I mean Cheryl's mother. And, you know, just people. It's living things and creatures of all varieties. So who said that about what?
Janice Dickinson, the supermodel.
Yes.
She wrote
not Police Girl. That's Angie Dickinson.
That's Angie Dickinson.
Okay.
Janice Dickinson. And she wrote a autobiography about her time as a model and, you know, sexing up the movie stars and whatnot and dating guys like Mick Jagger and crap. And yeah, she had a thing with Liam Neeson at one time when he was starting out as an actor, and she was trying to become a photographer, actually, and she took some photos of him and then had him like strip down, and they later became lovers.
But very intimate.
But she said, and this is a direct quote, because you don't read a statement like this and ever forget it. She said, "It was like he had an Evian bottle down there."
All right then. You know, the thing about Liam Neeson, like with some guys, you just resent that, you know, because usually, here's the thing, it's just in my experience, I'm just saying for me, usually just some man who is massively endowed, those guys are usually just dumb as bricks. I mean, it's usually just smart as a box of hair, which is odd because, I don't know.
I'm agreeing with you, and I don't necessarily know that that's really true, because I've dated a lot of men that were actually very intelligent, and by some weird coincidence of nature, most of the men that I've been involved with have been quite amply endowed.
I don't know what it is. And this is always because, you know, and every guy's had this experience, too, of where there's, you know, some girl you know, and, you know, maybe you're interested in her, maybe you're not, maybe, you know, whatever. Maybe you yourself wish to have some intimate relationship. But sometimes it's just, you know, sometimes it's just like a female friend, and you somehow end up being the gay hairdresser who just is, like, hearing about all of her, you know, all of the guys she's stooping on the side. So, but just every guy has known this, where it's like you hear some girl talking about some guy she's dating, and he's always just some dirtbag. He's always just a complete waste of skin and air. And then at some point, the girl, usually while half into a bottle of red wine, will say, "Here's the thing. It's just like, I mean, it's just huge, and it's just like it's so uncomfortable, and I'm so sore all the time." And you're just like, "I don't want to go home, leave." And the thing is, it's never about the guys who are really like intelligent. You know, it's never about the guys who are really bright who have their act together. It's always just like some dirt-heeled drummer from a band, you know, that sucks.
Well, do you ever think that maybe the kind of girl that gets drunk and, like, talks about that in that fashion might just be sleeping with stupid guys?
Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say more, but I'm just... And here's the thing, and I don't think that there's any sort of connection, I don't think there could be anyway, between that and... Then because a lot of times, like, if you just see somebody who's really pretty in general, you know, man, woman, doesn't matter. If you just see, like, a guy or girl who's really, really, really good looking, a lot of times they're just dumb as hammers because it's like, what, they don't have to be smart. I mean, really, what is the point? Why bother, you know? It's sort of a thank you, God, I don't have to go to school sort of a thing. But if a guy's just got a huge schlong, I mean, unless he's making a lot of 8mm loops or something, it wouldn't really be known. So there must be some other correlation there, some sort of causal relationship that doesn't necessarily have to do with society's lowered expectations for him.
No. No, my only
Why are we talking about penis size right out of the gate?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't even know where that came from.
Me either. I have nothing. I don't know. I have no idea where that came from.
Prominent features, mouth.
Oh, Patrick.
Jimmy Page.
All right. I don't know about Patrick's penis. I'm telling you right now. I'm just planting that flag right here.
That's one of those lines, like I was talking about last hour, that I've crossed a lot of lines that I didn't think I would be crossing, that I was sure I would not be crossing since I started working with you, things that I said, I'll never talk about that. But I do have two areas that I won't talk about. One is bathroom habits, and the other is my actual current sex life.
Okay. Except, you know, you've already talked about Patrick's penis on the show.
Have I?
Yes.
Well.
So you may tell yourself now that that's a line you'll never cross.
Well, I may have said, you know, something complimentary about it in passing, but I certainly...
Reference.
I know for a fact I didn't go into detail.
You're not going to discuss your bedroom behaviors at this point in your life.
No.
Okay. Well, fair. Look,
no. I'll talk about stuff I've done in the past to a certain degree, but it's like there's certain things that just have to stay private, and that is what happens in my bedroom and what happens in my bathroom.
Okay.
Those two things we don't talk about.
Just curious. Hey, just as a totally unrelated note or sort of, somebody says, hey, where's Andy Dick? Is Andy Dick in town?
I guess he is because some people were on Twitter doing a hashtag of fake Andy Dick things, fake Andy, where's Andy Dick things.
Right.
Of him supposedly saying things like, I'm dressed in a mailman's costume and pooping in someone's lawn.
Yeah, that was the fake Andy Dick.
So.
All right, then. It is Wednesday. It's 503-505-6964. If you'd like to engage with us telephonically today, if you would like to join the conversation, as they say, with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have on this Wednesday. You can do that if you like. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email it's rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. Text box on the website is open. You can also Skype if you like. You can Skype if you want to. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is all one word there. Rick Emerson Show. That's our Skype name. Let's see. We got a Geek Watch coming up today. Obama Watch. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt myself here. But, you know, we were just playing the South Park thing at the beginning with the Jupoco Man. So, have you seen the preview for tonight's South Park, the little trailer?
No,
it's
no, I
so
haven't.
Awesome. It's so tonight's at 10 o'clock tonight South Park. We talked about this before that I've sort of all of us have kind of drifted out of the habit of watching South Park, not even live, but I mean really just the same night because it's available all the time. I mean, it's not even like you have to go to like. You know, you don't have to download it or something. You can just go to, like, what is it, southparkstudios.com or whatever, and it's like they just have the entire series there just, like, on demand. It's sort of like a Hulu just for South Park. So there's really not much call. In a way, that is actually that's a testament to how great that show is and how devoted their their viewing base is, that they continue to get great ratings. I think they're still the highest-rated thing on Comedy Central when there is no real need to watch that show live. I mean, it is like a complete and abject lack of need to watch South Park the night it airs. I mean, you could be watching it, you know, the next day. You could be watching it, at any time in the future. I mean, it's just there, hot and cold, running South Park.
Yeah, my thing, I don't actually keep up anymore with the new episodes at all. I don't go out of my way to see them. But it's nice that I know that it's like always running a couple of times a day, reruns. And now it's like I'll watch it just in random. Sometimes I'll see something that I've never seen before. And it's like this delightful little gift.
It's a surprise.
Yeah.
It's like finding $5 in a pocket. So I was, but last night I was pulling this sound of the Jumpoco Man thing. I was actually looking for something altogether different. I was looking for the Alabama Man commercial, which is one of my all-time favorite.
Me too. That and the Cherokee hair tampons.
Yeah.
Those are like two of my favorite things.
And you know, it's weird when you think about the ways to which South Park has impacted the way we speak. Because I got to just now at the top, you heard that Cartman doing something which Laura and I do constantly in our house. To the extent that we don't even really recognize, I think, like consciously in the moment that we're doing a South Park thing. But whenever one of us is trying to get the other to do something, we fall into the, Bitman, Pokemon. And we totally do the Cartman Bitman thing.
Yeah, Patrick and I do the respect my authority thing. And remembering the Cherokee hair tampons, sometimes when Patrick will ask me how my time of the month is, I'll say, well, remember that elevator scene in The Shining?
Yeah.
And then we both just nod sagely.
Here's the other thing that that we do because of South Park. And you, I don't know if you've witnessed it, but this is a thing that we do so often, again, that I don't even notice it as being strange until it's ever pointed out to me by somebody else. It is that Lara and I's customary greeting to each other on the phone is, hey, guy. And that's, which is, and it doesn't matter what we're talking about, when we're talking, where she is, where I am, anytime, day or night, if we talk to each other on the phone, and we do it back and forth, hey, guy, hey, guy. And that is from South Park, the movie. And that's when Saddam Hussein is always trying to get Satan into bed. Hey, guy, you want to... And then he's like waving his angry crimson penis around. But that is Saddam Hussein's greeting to Satan, and I think to like everybody. Because I think at the end, when he gets pierced by the rock and then the seven demon dogs of hell or whatever drag him down, he goes, hey, guy, this sucks, or whatever he's been. So the hey, guy thing has totally just infiltrated our language.
Yeah, Pat and I, if the dog or the cat is bothering us for food, we will do the whiny, no kitty, that's my papay, at the animal. We also do a thing from basketball sometimes when we just sit there and say, dude.
I'm all for basketball references. That's a great film. It's a film that is literally, I think, underappreciated.
It really is. My thing with basketball is I remember it came out right around almost exactly the same time as Something About Mary.
Right.
And everybody went crazy for Something About Mary, and I really didn't find it especially funny. And I thought, maybe I'm losing my sense of humor. And then like a week later, I saw Basketball. And I kept telling everybody, screw that other movie. Go see Basketball. And nobody would believe me.
Which is strange because those guys were, I mean, not that they've cooled off since then. But I mean, that was really like around the second or third season of South Park, I think. They were kind of at their apogee in terms of media exposure.
Yeah.
And so I'm surprised it wasn't a bigger hit. And also, it's funny. Because here's my thing, is that, not to get off into a whole South Park thing, but I find Orgasmo overrated. Basketball, I just, and I know this makes me a bad, and we play like, you know, the man song and the whatever, and that's another thing where I do the man, you know, whatever, but I don't think Orgasmo's all that good. And I know that I'm supposed to. There's isolated moments in it that
are a few moments in it that are just brilliant. The scene when the two missionaries go to the old woman's house at the beginning.
And she's with the foul mouth.
Yeah. And she's like, well, you can just F right off.
Yeah.
You know, but also, but it's, you know, you compare that, just the consistency of the funny, you hold that up against Cannibal the Musical,
and
there's just, like, no comparison. It's just not consistent.
Also, there's that sequence in Orgasmo that is, like, flat-out stolen from the Matt. And I love Trey and Matt, but let's not speak to each other in the, you know, in let's not have any illusions about this. That there's that sequence in Orgasmo that is stolen from The Man with Two Brains, which is where, and it's, I think it's Trey as the missionary, he's kneeling, he's like, okay, God, so if there's any sort of a sign that I shouldn't do this, just give me any kind of a sign, any kind of a sign at all. And like everything in the house starts vibrating, and there's like a woo, and the cupboards are opening and closing and things are falling, which is exactly the same as the sequence from Man with Two Brains when Steve Martin is hooking up with whatever her name is, Elva Mulmahay or whatever, or I guess it's not, I guess it's maybe the, maybe he's hooking up with what's her name, the wrong woman. And he's, like, asking his dead wife, the picture on the wall. He's like, if there's any reason why I shouldn't do this, just let me know. And exactly the same thing happens, where everything in the house starts vibrating and wobbling and turning around and whatever.
And even then, it was probably an old joke. It had probably been used previously in something else.
And that's the thing about it is I've noticed in my experience, the guys who are, like filmmakers or songwriters who just flat out, like, Xerox something, almost without exception, it's the guys who are actually so brilliant and genius that that it's like you wonder why, and you wonder it has to be accidental. You know, like when Brian Wilson like would lift a Chuck Berry song, and you're going like, you're Brian Wilson, like you're the smartest guy in the history of you know. I mean, you're sitting there just constructing like these 5-part harmonies in your sleep, and yet you're lifting Sweet Little 16.
And maybe they're just so used to being brilliant that something pops into their head, and they don't even bother to question whether or not they thought of it themselves.
How could I not have written this? I'm Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
Well, it's like how Paul McCartney went around after he came up with Yesterday, and he sang it to everybody. He hummed the melody for like 3 weeks because he was convinced he'd stolen it from somewhere. He was just like, well, there's no way I could have written this. And he just sang it at everybody, unwilling to believe in his own brilliance. So it's the opposite. But I was on South Park Studios last night looking for the Alabama Man cut, and instead I found the Chimpokoman thing. And I saw the trailer for tonight's episode, which is And I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to talk about something else in just a second as an adjunct to this, unsurprisingly. But I will say that tonight's episode is all about Steve Jobs and Apple, and the only thing they show, the little trailer, and I think there's another part that they put out subsequent to this, but the trailer is of Steve Jobs at, like, Macworld or, you know, whatever the thing where he does the unveiling of the, you know, ooh, just one more thing. And he's unveiling the next stage of Apple's computing, which is the human sent iPad. And all I know about it is that they show Steve Jobs on stage going, and so the next stage of Apple's computing revolution is the human sent iPad. And then they just cut to Stan and his mom and his dad all linked, pardon me, mouth to ass in the living room typing on a keyboard and going, oh, and it's so, I wish that I hadn't watched that before I tried to sleep. Because while you were kept awake by the idea of maybe having another making out with your dad dream, I was just sitting there in bed just picturing a bunch of cartoon characters with their lips and their anis stitched together and just wishing, and, you know, just for the love of God that I hadn't seen it. So there you go. So that's going to be coming up. It'll be interesting to watch tonight's episode of South Park because when I was in New York, I saw this interview with Trey and Matt in Time Out New York magazine or something, and they were just getting ready. They were like a week away from unveiling Book of Mormon the musical, which I saw, which I loved. And I saw it though in the last week of previews. I saw it on, I think, the 16th, and I think it opened on the 24th. And so the Time Out New York did this interview with Trey Parker and Matt Stone, and they kept talking in the interview. The interview led off by saying, you know, Trey Parker and Matt Stone are sitting backstage at the O'Neill Theater in New York. You know, they're not funny. They're not, you know, they're not, they have no sense of humor left. They're exhausted. They can barely stand. They can, you know, they're just drained of all energy and inspiration because they were talking about this huge just death march that had happened up to the unveiling of Book of Mormon, the musical. Apparently, because they left L.A. and they flew to New York like 6 months ago to work on it. And I guess, according to Matt Stone, they didn't see a run through of Mormon, the musical, you know, cue to cue, curtain to curtain, with the music and everything, until I think something like 12 days before the first public performance. It might not have even been that. It might have been like a week before. And he said it was like a week before the curtain went up and the first public performance of it that they even saw the whole thing front to back. And so every single night they were there tinkering, editing, revising, altering. And he said that literally they expected to be working on it and revising it and fixing it and adjusting things in the script and the performance up until the very, very night that it opened. And then as soon as the opening happened, they didn't even get to wait till the next day. On opening night, Book of Mormon, you know, came out to rave reviews, and then they had to get on a plane that night and fly back to Los Angeles because the first South Park actually had to go into production a week after that. And so they actually had 7 days until they had to have the first South Park ready. And he said that, of course, the deal with South Park is that they only get, you know, 7 days between episodes because they're famous for, like, doing that, you know, that thing of just getting it done at the last moment. So they were going to get 7 days after being in New York for 6 months working on this thing to fly back to L.A. before the first South Park had to be ready. And they said they didn't have a single idea. They didn't have a single plot. They did not have a single notion for how the season was going. They had no ideas at all. And Matt Stone said something like, you know, he said, I really would just like to take a couple months and just go to the Caribbean and just hang out and just sit on the beach somewhere. And Trey Parker just said, he's like, I just want to be locked in a Holiday Inn and just stare at a wall for like a year and not have to talk. But they were just going to have to get onto a plane and head back and just start the grind again. And I know that these are good problems to have. This is what my friend Mike's father would call problems of opportunity. But it did make me feel a little bit better about my life because I was, you know, I felt like I was in a little bit of a grind a few weeks ago, just having to juggle a whole bunch of things at once. And that Trey Parker was just talking about what a nightmare it was, and he was just bemoaning the fact that he couldn't remember the last time that he was sane and well rested. So I felt I was able to sort of face the day with renewed vim and vigor and energy, knowing that. Knowing that many of us share these same problems. Isn't that right, Don?
Exactly.
All
yes.
right. What headlines
I mean,
are we working
I don't,
on today?
I don't actually have those kinds of problems.
You, what do, you the, work on a lot of stuff. You have you have many plates you're spinning at
I
once.
Do.
You got things.
I got things.
Are you working like a radio thing, like a radio play and a novel and you do like four different shows? And
yeah.
You're busy.
Yeah.
You got
I am.
Stuff. You're smart, not like they say.
And during all of that, I still try to find time to nap. you know.
Okay. What do we have headline-wise today?
Well, e-books are gaining in popularity. We have a whole lot of stuff about Obama's birth certificate.
Yeah, what a whole lot of stuff.
And an explosion triggers a flaming manhole.
I got your flaming manhole.
You just don't get to say the words flaming manhole often enough.
No, one of the best top fives we ever did. We had, and she was hot as balls, we had the on this show, I know, a few years ago. We were still at KOTK. We had, she wasn't like the editor. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary has many, many editors. But it was one of the senior editors at the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. And she was, I don't even know why they were doing this. They had, insanely enough, they were doing like a book tour, like for the dictionary. I don't know why. I guess they were trying to, like, it was said, they were trying to, get a little attention, trying to get people to not use free online dictionaries or something. I don't know what it was all about. In retrospect, I can't remember. But
words, use them.
It was, I forget what the purpose of it was, but it was great because they had one of these senior editors from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, and she was actually touring the country and doing interviews and talking about, you know, some of the stock stuff about, like, you know, what are the e-terms they've added this, you know, and what are the sort of internet, you know, what are the acronyms and funny phrases we've added to the dictionary, and just all the normal stuff they have them talk about. But she came into the studio, and we got her to do a top five. And so she put together the top five words that sound profane that aren't. And her number one word, that she, and she did this, her number one word was manhole. And it was, and she looked just like, what's her name, the receptionist in Ghostbusters.
Oh, wow.
What is that chick's name? It's not Janine Turner.
Swoozy Kurtz?
No, it's not Swoozy Kurtz.
Crap.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
No, Mr. Venkman.
Because the character she played was named Janine, is why you thought Janine.
Is she from Northern Exposure?
No, now you're thinking of Janine, what's her name, who was on Northern
Janine
Exposure.
Turner.
Janine Turner was on Northern Exposure. The character in Ghostbusters
is named Janine. But we don't know her actual name. Has she done anything else?
Yeah.
I mean, I know that she probably has. I just don't. And it's not Swoozy Kurtz.
No, it's not. But it's the other actors that I somehow.
Annie Potts.
Annie Potts, yeah, who was on
Designing
Women.
Really? That's Annie Potts?
Yeah. That's the thing I talk about, how I store people in the same place in my brain. I always have Annie Potts and Swoozy Kurtz in the same place in my brain for some reason.
I never would have guessed that that was.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I watched the hell out of Designing Women. And I don't think I ever put that together. They're like two totally different. That's weird. That's bizarre that I never made that connection before, because she so totally is. You know why?
Also awesome in Pretty in Pink.
Here's the thing about Janine, the secretary in Ghostbusters. She's so great in that movie that to me, it's like I don't even really think about the fact that it's an actress. She's just the receptionist from Ghostbusters. I mean, she is that role. She is subsumed by it. Yeah, also in Pretty Pink, and somebody says freaking hot. No, that's totally true. Why was I talking about her just now?
Flaming manhole?
Yeah, so the chick from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary looked just like Annie Potts as Janine in Ghostbusters. And she's like, number one word that sounds dirty that isn't, manhole. And she had like the weird, like the sort of pointy glasses and everything, and she was completely hot. All right, well, in any event, hey, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com or dawn@rickemerson.com. Don't forget, you can join Don Taylor later on the day at Cascadia.fm, 4 p.m. Pacific time. Cascadia.fm for another installment of Ham-Fisted Radio, where she's ably joined by Mr. Bobby Fatboy Roberts. About what will you be speaking today?
Not a clue. As usual, we will just be winging it. The thing is, we start the show, and I always think, every week I think, God, we've done no show prep. We'll have nothing to talk about. And then it's just wall-to-wall chatter for an entire hour.
Awesome.
Because we usually only see each other for that 1 hour a week, so it's kind of like we have lots...
You're catching up.
We have lots to pontificate about. Plus, we have just way too many opinions about, you know, movies and crap TV and just life in general.
So that is coming up today. Movies and crap TV and life in general. It's
yes.
Cascadia.fm, Ham-Fisted Radio, or at HamFistedRadio.com. Somebody says, Annie Potts, flaming hot. Really? Yes. Yes, she's...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe not now, or, you know, like in 50 years. But, I mean, at this very moment, I would imagine she's still hot, and she was certainly hot in Ghostbusters.
Oh, yes.
There's no getting around that. All right. What else was there? I was going to talk about some stuff. I feel like, here's the thing. this is different from most days. Most days, it's like we're just talking about things that are so horrible and so horrifying and so embarrassing and just awful and vile that I just feel bad talking about them with Anna Griffin in the room. Now I just got to think and say, I feel like I ought to save for her to be in the room because I think she might want to weigh in on them.
Oh.
Like this thing about ovaries, for instance. Okay. Dawn, you've got ovaries, right?
Yes. I mean, I've never seen them, but I'm operating on faith.
They're like France, you know, they're there.
Yeah.
And so does Anna Griffin. I've got this.
Wait a minute. I do know for a fact that I have ovaries because I got a really uncomfortable and embarrassing ultrasound of them once.
Of your ovaries?
Yes.
Is that like when they do? Is it like when they're looking for bodies and they drag the box along the ground?
No, I had a doctor who opined that I had
the cancer?
An ovarian. No, I had the syndrome where you have ovarian cysts. And I said, well, does that mean that you might want to like do an ultrasound and look to see if I actually have the ovarian cyst? And he said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. He was actually a terrible doctor, and I didn't go to him very long.
Hi, Don!
It was very much like that. Sure, why not? He honestly got, he looked at me and he went, based on the 5 minutes of conversation we've had and the couple of things you've told me, I think you've got this. Here's a prescription.
Excellent.
And I said, well, shouldn't you like maybe look at the ovaries? He's like, sure, why not? So I went to this MRI place where they do imaging over on Powell somewhere or something. And I thought, okay. I thought I was going to do the thing where you lay on the table and they put the jelly on your stomach and they just like do the thing like they do with the pregnant ladies.
Yes.
No, to actually look at the ovaries, they have to like look at it from inside. So this lady, thank God it was a female technician because it might have been even more awkward if it was a guy. She pulled out this thing that looked like a microphone. It was like the size of a handheld microphone. And then just proceeded to like put KY jelly all over it. And I went, I'm sorry, what? And
where's that you're going with it?
You're
oh,
going
no,
to do
I,
what?
Oh, for the love of.
Oh, yeah, just put your feet in the stirrups. I was like, really? Seriously? Okay. But that's how they look at your ovaries. I discovered.
So they're there.
So now I know I actually have them because I saw the pictures.
Dawn.
Welcome, new listeners.
This says, I'm so sorry for this. This says, I'm gonna call this is Seamus too. He says, Dawn's doctor doesn't sound all that bad. She's just overreacting. That's awesome. All right, fantastic.
Oh, Seamus.
Oh, you. All right. Ovaries. Hi, everybody.
Anna Griffin.
No. It's the. So he was just doing. So your previous doctor, he was just doing like the Dr. Laura thing of just like hearing, like listening to you talk for 20 seconds and then telling you exactly what your problem
yeah.
is without actually investigating it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
by the way, an MRI place on Powell sounds disreputable.
Actually, it's a very nice place. It's something imaging, and it's one of these places that contracts out to different doctor's offices. And,
all right.
and it was actually very, very nice and very professional. But yeah, it's over in. I've driven by it a couple of times. And, oh, yeah, that's that place with the thing that where I was violated by the microphone.
That's where the bad lady touched me. Okay. If you'd like to Skype, you can do that. It's Rick Emerson Show at Skype, or you can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn at rickemerson.com. You can also call us 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. I don't know. Screw it. Let's just take a break now.
Okay.
Well, we've been talking for half an hour. We've been jawing for half an hour.
Yeah.
Because, other way, if we go to the news desk now, we're going to come back and it's going to be late. And Anna Griffin bicycled here, by the way. And so I know that, you know, so why give her a chance to sort of, you know, why give her a chance to de-glisten? Just
That's
bring
true.
Her on here and just let her sweat.
Woohoo!
You know, she expended calories to actually get here. I mean, she really expended actual effort to get here to do this stupid
well,
show.
Well, to be fair, it could be one of those things that she figured, well, I got to do this, so I might as well make it count.
Get something good out of it. All right. So we're going to do this. We'll come back. Oh, also, we'll talk about, Yanni. We'll talk about Mortal Kombat. A little Piranha news. Let's see. I'll make a joke about Michelle Rodriguez.
Okay.
Let's see. More ovary talk and so forth. So stay there. It is the. All right. We'll let it be a dealer's choice here, Dawn. You get. You can choose here. You got your Beatles. Your Springsteen, your Gary Glitter, not the song you're thinking of, or your ABBA.
Ooh, wow. I was all set to go with the Gary Glitter until you said ABBA.
It's up to you.
ABBA.
Okay, there you go. Back after this, it is the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. Oh, by the way, apparently when he was snarking just now about your ovaries, it'll all make sense here in a second. Apparently Seamus is taking a break. I got this. I've talked about this before, the idea that Seamus and I sometimes get the sense that we are the only two people awake in the Western Hemisphere for large sections of the evening because I picture him just sitting at home in that. What has he got? What is that? The name of that thing? The comfy sack? Or the,
yeah, the world's largest beanbag chair.
$900 beanbag chair.
The size of a sofa.
I picture him just like sitting there like Dr. Octopus, where he's just got these sort of robotic tentacles coming out. And that's the only way that he can simultaneously be playing Call of Duty, be performing his job, which I think actually happens in several different time zones around the world because it's an international company, and then also just emailing me about Mortal Kombat, as he did last night several times. So I guess the Mortal Kombat reboot, or like the official relaunch of Mortal Kombat, came out today for Xbox. And he sent me this. See if I can find it. He actually sent me an email about it. The subject line, this is so great. This is really why I love, this is why this is our place and these are our people, Don. I should actually welcome Anna Griffin for the Oregonian here before we do anything else. Hello, Anna Griffin.
Mortal Kombat!
Here's what the subject line of the email is. I got this at, I don't know, like 8 o'clock this morning, and I think there was another one sent last night, and the subject line is just, and it's written out this way. Wait, I have to do it commercial style. The subject line is, Mortal Kombat! And then he puts all in caps with asterisk, finish him! And he says, so the new Mortal Kombat game reboot came out a few days ago, and this just arrived arrived this morning, the 360 version. That's what I plan to play the most. He says, it's like 1993 all over again. Me skipping school, paying $4 to get into the Games People Play Arcade in Clackamas and playing Mortal Kombat 2 the entire day. Pre-internet, so watching dudes totally own everyone. Winner stays, loser pays. It was heaven. Waiting round after round until my quarter came up, being lucky if I could win a round, much less a match. Hearing insane rumors about what a guy supposedly saw that you could do with a certain character under certain conditions that all, of course, were urban legends. And then he just signs it with another Mortal Kombat catchphrase. So I guess the reboot, and I don't really know a whole lot about it, because I was terrible at Mortal Kombat, is the thing. I was really, like a lot of games, I was really fascinated by the culture of it and the idea of it and the way that it was marketed and sort of a lot of the viral, or whatever we called it then, a lot of the word-of-mouth rumors about Mortal Kombat, but I was never actually good at playing it. So I don't know a whole lot about, you know, the actual gameplay of it apart, you know, just as an observer. But he then sends this follow-up message. He says, I'm now taking a break from Mortal Kombat, in fact, after about 6 hours of straight play. Some 16-plus years later, I discover that my youthful coordination is no more. I'm totally ham-handing the buttons like one of God's special children trying to defeat a whack-a-mole. And I'm not even playing against human opponents yet. So, there you go. This, by the way, is the same friend of ours who actually sent us a long message about how he was having to force himself to leave the house and to go to Walgreens to buy eye drops because his eyes felt sandblasted because he'd been playing Call of Duty for 75 hours or something. Also, by the way, he's one of the most successful people I know, which is really, like, indicates that he's got a brain the size of a planet, that he can be doing his, like, normal gig and then this at the same time. So, it's good to be alive. Hello, Anna Griffin.
So what you're saying about Mortal Kombat is you weren't the rip the guy's head off. His spinal column was hanging down as you lorded it over his dead body.
No, and in fact, embarrassingly enough, because I was like, you know, because I would have been like 18 maybe, 18, 19. So, you know, not too far out of my male adolescence. It was sort of embarrassing that the only character I was really good at was the female character of Sonya, who I think was actually so terrible. I mean, this was for several characters, but they didn't even continue her to the second game. I don't think she showed up in the sequel. And that was the only place I could do a finishing move. And it was this sort of thing of like left, left, right, something, and there was a fireball would come out. But then it was like there was always this moment you would just like be, you know, you'd racking up your quarters against some other, you know, guy, and he would just go, you're Sonya? And you go, yeah, what, so what? And he'd be like, oh, all right, whatever, you know. And then it's like he would always just be Sub-Zero or somebody and just, yeah, and then just pull up my still beating heart and hold it aloft and then eat it or whatever it is that happens.
That is an interesting sort of cultural touchstone, because I would actually think for sort of adolescent boys, there would be an appeal to playing the woman.
Can I just tell you that
My husband almost always plays female characters, and I think he, and I asked him why, and he just kind of shrugged, I don't know, and then after thought about it a second, he goes, I guess if I've just got to like look at a character, for the next 15 hours, I might as well look at a lady.
Aaron Durant and I have actually had a lot of conversations about this because he and I, it was one of those things, it was like going to a party and wearing the same dress as somebody else. When Left 4 Dead came out, Aaron and I discovered through some sort of conversational happenstance that he and I both played the character of Zoe. And he goes, well, you're Zoe. I'm usually Zoe.
And I always played Francis, the grizzled old man.
See, it was just totally – which in a way, I mean, I guess is less weird though because there's not – because it – I, you know, it's like it's that whole thing that I don't – I don't think like as an adolescent when a lot of these viewpoints are sort of hammered into your head by society, I don't think that you would have been made fun of for playing the male character. But I think, you know, if you're a guy and you're a teenager and you're playing the female character, I think that especially when I was growing up, I mean, it may be different now, but I think there was a fair amount of ridicule put on that. So it's odd, though, that there was just this sort of weird, I don't know, this sort of like a chink in the societal armor through which that behavior just left, because I know a lot. And so we heard from – but for the rest of that day, we heard from guys who were like, I always play the female character. I thought it was just me. And I really don't have any explanation for it. We tried actually really desperately to get the female voice talent who plays – she's not only Zoe in Left 4 Dead. She's also Cortana in Halo. She lives in Seattle. We tried to get her on the show and She wisely steered clear, probably because she's had a lot of experience of just like bespectacled pasty guys going, will you talk like Cortana from Halo? Will you say my name? It would be awesome.
And tell me you love me.
I
don't understand people who play games where you can create an avatar who play as themselves. It's like I play a lot of more Sims than my spouse would like, and I know people who create Sims who look just like them.
Now, when you say – now, what kind of games are we talking about here?
Like The Sims or what's Second Life?
Right.
You play Second Life? I don't play Second Life.
Okay.
But I know people who do. Or any, you know, Wii games, you try to make your little person
– And it doesn't look like you?
I don't want it to look like me.
Yeah, I think that there's a weird dichotomy there where people either labor to make it look exactly like them or it is they're like a giant dragon, you know, with three heads.
I want to be the giant dragon with three heads, yes, maybe in real life too.
Because otherwise what would be the point of, you know, I mean really, who wants to go online just to be like yourself? I mean if your own life was actually all that great, you wouldn't be spending a lot of time online, and I speak for myself there as well.
I haven't played The Sims in a really long time, but when I did, there was this point at which I found a downloadable some skins someone had done where you could make all of your characters into various like superheroes and stuff. So I had this whole little neighborhood where like Batman and Superman and Catwoman were neighbors, you know, and like Frankenstein and somebody and Freddy Krueger lived next door. And then they'd be walking, you know, doing that thing where they walk down the street and visit. And like, oh, Frankenstein's here, you know, let him in, Batman.
I have a bit of a Sims addiction. When I start playing it, I will just sit down and 12 hours later, it's 5 o'clock in the morning and I've been playing. You know, this is why the family is not allowed to leave town, because I will fall into a hole of playing The Sims.
You're like
I won't go back to it because I just found it was so time consuming, like managing all their bathroom habits and their jobs and things.
I am just a crazy control freak, it turns out.
I keep finding these things though. I'll just see something and I won't go back to ever playing The Sims, but I'll see something where it's like, The Sims, medieval life. And I just go, ooh.
Must have.
That would be fun. No, I'm not going there again.
I have not bought that yet for a reason, because I like my life and don't want to lose my job.
Well, the thing about The Sims is my wife is a huge Sims player for several years, I think. And I think actually long enough ago that it was just for the PC. And she was a big Sims player. But she got to the point again where it was like consuming so much of her energy and so much of her time that she had to make like a clean break from it. And now I think she doesn't have the desire to do it now because she works with crazy folk all day. And so I think basically her entire day is like, no, back over here. No, don't eat that. No, don't set that on fire. Sit, you know, and just, I mean, it's just like a bunch of sort of human-shaped puppies that she has to deal with all day. And I think the idea of coming home and having to do that all over again, and it surprises me actually because you got kids. So it surprised me that you are still a Sims player
I go through phases where I'm allowed to do it. And I'm not allowed to do it. My life is not my own.
I would just think that, but I guess it seems to me like you would kind of get your fill of having to control people and having to be like, no, clean that up.
But on the computer, they do what I tell them to do.
Ah, I see. So this is sort of, it's a wish fulfillment kind of thing.
And I can kill them if I want to.
Well, I think it was Kristen Bowie that talked about how she had this, there's something really, okay, somebody needs to write. Okay, I got to stop and get a hold of myself. Hold on. I'm just going to take a little. I'm gibbering myself into a frenzy over here. About a year and a half ago, I read this book, and I think it was actually right as we were starting, we were getting ready to launch this version of the show, because I think I had it when we met with Robert Wagner at one point. This book, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was this at MIT, of course. They had written, and they have their own publishing company there, and they had put out this book where it was basically a bunch of really, really in-depth psychological and socio-political, socio-cultural analyses of different aspects of World of Warcraft and what it says, how it is different from or similar to the real world, and what it says about not only the way that people are in the real world, but how people behave in World of Warcraft as compared to the real world, and what the overlapping or non-overlapping behaviors indicate about us. It was actually really, really fascinating. I think somebody should do the same thing with The Sims, because even more than World of Warcraft, The Sims is really like a blank. That is a tabula rasa onto which you can just – I mean, you can project any kind of behavior, good, bad. I mean, if you're just a jackass in World of Warcraft, eventually you'll be dealt with. I mean, somebody will handle you, and you will not – I mean, you won't be able to – you know, your jackassery will be forcibly ended. With The Sims, though – I mean, you are the godhead of the entire joint. And it's like, but we got Kristen Bowie, who I think revealed that 9 times out of 10, she would just amuse herself by putting the Sims in the swimming pool and then just removing the ladder and then just watching them slowly glug one by one to the bottom.
Yeah, I didn't know that you could kill them until I did it accidentally once when I had put the barbecue outside on the patio too close to a tree.
I'm going to do that.
And then all of a sudden, my Sim was on fire and running around waving his arms and screaming.
Did you feel terrible? Were you traumatized?
I did feel really terrible. And then later, when he came back as a ghost and was haunting the house, I was like, oh, I should kill more of them. This is cool.
Did you... I remember the first time that we Lara had a kitchen fire because she didn't bother to give the guy any cooking skills. And so he was just, you know, well, I guess I'll make some bagels, you know, and he was just gone. And there was the most horrifying thing. I was actually really – I have to – I'm not going to lie. I was legitimately sort of disturbed by it that I think the guy's actually running around going or like whatever Sim talk for fire is. And then later he just appears as an urn of ashes, and the other Sims would occasionally just stop and they would just mourn for a while. They would just they'd be on their way to work. Wick and things went on. They would just cry in front of the urn, and then they would just go back to work. And it was freaking me out, and I had to quit watching it. The whole thing was so effed up. It was so bizarre.
There's a version of – I think it's the second Sims where the Grim Reaper actually comes. Death comes and takes the person away.
Oh, God.
And you can negotiate with Death.
Really?
Yeah, you can talk to Death.
Is this where you play him
in
a game of Boggle?
No, I need him. Yum, 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 yum.
Okay, that's – okay, here's the thing.
Anna Griffin speaks Sim.
Just now, that was simultaneously hilarious, also a little unnerving, and then to X percentage of the listeners, very hot.
Could you say my name in Sim for me, please? Thank you.
I was also – here's a way that we can all just carbon date ourselves as well, like rings in a video game tree. I remember in that big guinea pig virus outbreak of like – of aught-one or whatever it was. There was something in the Sims where it's like you would just go, oh, a guinea pig, how great. And then everybody in the house is dead.
But it's a life lesson. You have to wash your hands after you play with a guinea pig.
There was actually a thing in World of Warcraft, I guess, maybe a couple years. God, we're dorks. Even for this show, this is a dorky conversation.
I completely forgot about the guinea pig virus.
Oh, no, I didn't. I mean, because it was just because that was right when I was thinking, well, like, maybe I'll play, maybe it'll be a bonding thing. I'll play, you know, I'll also play
The
Sims.
Why are they dying?
And then, yeah, and I was like, she comes home from work, and I'm like, baby, my Sims are all dying. What's going on here? And she's like, I don't, oh, you got the guinea pig. And it's like, no one had told me. It was like everybody knew but me. There was a thing a couple years ago in World of Warcraft that I think was an actual glitch that Blizzard did not mean for it to happen this way. But there was like some virus, and I mean like an actual like the Black Plague or whatever the Sim version of it, whatever the where is it? What's the freaking world? Where are you? You're on the planet of like
– you're in the World of Warcraft.
But it's an actual – it's not Stormwind. That's like
I've
the kingdom.
I've never played it. I don't know.
Well, I have never played it either, but these are things – oh, it's going to bother me that I don't know. But anyway, but there was
it's
like
gonna
some –
it's going to turn into like the Rebecca Black video. You're going to like say, you need to know about World of Warcraft to do your job.
I'm just saying cultural literacy is not a thing that finds you. You have to seek it out. But there was like an in-game virus, and it was like, you know, because the whole thing has a vaguely medieval bent. So there was like some virus that was, you know, that was – you know, that would, and then you had to go find a healing potion or something. But the virus was Azeroth. Thank you. The whole thing was like you would only catch the virus. Your character would catch the virus if you were in this one dungeon of like some castle somewhere. And so it's like if you went into the castle and went into the basement, like into the dungeon, you would get this virus. But Blizzard had calculated something incorrectly, like some zero was supposed to be a one or vice versa. And the virus like escaped and was just like destroying the population of World of Warcraft. I mean, characters were just dying by the score, like in a way that they had not, and it totally was raging out of control. And the most fascinating result of that entire thing was that, I swear to Christ, that the Center for Disease Control said that they talked to Blizzard, and they asked Blizzard if they would mind turning over all of the sort of gameplay logs and, like, you know, whatever, like a sort of instant replay of that whole thing, because the CDC found, I guess unsurprisingly but fascinatingly, that people in World of Warcraft, their behavior when confronted with a virus outbreak mimicked real-world behavior almost exactly. The way that people would respond in terms of, like, self-quarantining or behavior pattern change, that some people would change their behaviors if there was a place that they knew they shouldn't go because there was a virus there. Other people would not, and in fact almost seemed perversely drawn to the idea that there was some sort of risk involved. And they said that there was that with any number of diseases or ailments, it mimicked – it was like a perfect analog. Which is just amazing and sort of mind-breaking when you think about it. I mean, that's the sort of thing that I can't – that is the reason that I do not do drugs, because I would – like, as fascinating as I find that now, it's like I would never leave my house. I would just sit there on the floor and just think about that, like, forever until I just – you know, until I was like a lab rat that just died of starvation. So anyway. Okay. We haven't done any actual news, have we?
No.
All right. Let's see. Was there anything I was going to talk about before we did the actual news? No, we'll get to all that stuff later. At the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk, it is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, let's start with our big jumbo-sized Obama watch.
Let's see. Here is your Obama watch for Wednesday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Like Barack Obama versus more of the same. If you're not into Clinton, if you're not for McCain, and if you want a new direction, and you're tired of the games, vote with me for Obama, and be an agent of change.
All right. So your Obama watch for Wednesday.
President Obama's original birth record was released to the public today. The so-called long-form birth certificates that some critics have been demanding. Speaking to reporters shortly afterward, before we do that, we'll talk about the Donald Trump thing.
Okay, we've got like massive. So we got Trump from yesterday, Trump for today. We got more Obama stuff. I got these. There's a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, because previously, yesterday, Donald Trump had been saying that he might run for president and had been questioning whether Obama was born in the U.S. When talking to Anderson Cooper, Trump made a new claim about the president's birth certificate.
I've been told that it's not there and it doesn't exist. And if that's the case, that's a big problem. I just heard that 2 days ago from somebody.
From some guy.
I don't want to say who.
A fella.
I've been told that the birth certificate is not there. It's missing.
The word on the street.
The devil on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Under his hair.
I mean, it's...
My hairpiece told me.
I think I said something like this on Twitter this morning. I said that, you know, the 2012 election cycle is already so much more entertaining than I dared hope. I mean, whatever dreams I may have had for just the glorious carnival atmosphere that's going to envelop this country. I mean, it's like it's starting earlier and it's already so much better than I didn't even want to hope for it, for fear that it, you know, wouldn't come true.
However, former Republican state official.
Yes.
Kayomi Fukino.
Sure.
Nice.
Hawaii, yes.
Says she has personally seen the original birth certificate with her own eyes.
It was absolutely authentic. He was absolutely born here in the state of Hawaii.
A Republican Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, who vetoed a bill in April that would have required presidential candidates to prove they were American citizens born in the U.S., thinks the so-called birther movement is a huge distraction. She says, it's just something I think is leading our country down a path of destruction and is not serving any good purpose.
It's just something that I think is... leading our country down a path of destruction.
An echo lead, as they say.
Your version was better.
Any good purpose.
No, but I mean, and so all of the reasons why she finds it to be just a horrible waste of time are all the reasons why it's the best thing that's ever happened to
me. It's a distraction from sending our police officers to pull over brown people just because of the color of their skin.
Now, why do you got to make me feel ashamed for rolling around in this like a dog on a lawn, Hannah Griffin?
I just hate everyone.
Oh, see? Okay. Now, see, you won me back immediately with that. So that was all just yesterday. So this was, I think, this is how quickly things are. So that was, I mean,
it was yesterday.
And here's the thing. It's like I meant to send a text to our friend Lisa Desjardins about this because I just I don't think anybody said anything about this, and I imagine it won't come out for a while. But I would just be more than anything. I think I would actually cut off one of my fingers if I could somehow be in the room or could have been in the room, Scott Baio and Zapped style, as they were debating whether or not to finally release this. Because, you know, for the longest time, they were just like, no, we're working over here. We're running the country.
You're just being dumb.
Just get bent. You know, find it yourself. It's over there somewhere. But the idea that they actually, like, that the White House then actually made the decision and they set aside time and energy and effort to go, here, it's right here, for the love of Jesus. You know, I mean, I can't even imagine the debate that must have happened. I mean, there's. I already want to fast forward. Here's the thing about me is I simultaneously want to be in the moment so that we can just be reveling in every horrible second of the story. I want to be into next year so we can already be leading up to the general election. And then I want to be 3 years from now when the tell-all book comes out, you know, like by Bob Woodward or Mark Halperin or somebody telling us about the whole behind-the-scenes thing of why the birth certificate was finally released.
I think they've handled it really well. I think refusing to dignify it for as long as they have was the appropriate and smart response because it's just idiotic. But I think coming out with it now makes it clear how idiotic it is.
Yeah, well, no, you're right. They perfectly balanced the – just in terms of the real politic of it, they perfectly balanced the satisfying people who were just going to keep squawking about it while at the same time sort of doing that like arched eyebrow to the rest of the country going, these people are fools, but, you know, just play along for a moment.
I want to see Trump's birth certificate so if we can see if he was actually born on the planet crazy person.
I think Trump started after the birth certificate thing yesterday. I think he then started talking about the college records. I think he was saying he wanted to see Obama's college.
I have that as a follow-up.
It's inconceivable he actually could have achieved, you know, decent grades in college.
And we know what this is actually all about, right? I mean, everyone's clear on the fact that this is racism.
I mean, in Trump's head, I honestly don't know what it's all about. I mean, I know
it's about ratings in Trump's head.
Yeah. I'll put it this way:
it's about attention. People are talking about this, so I'll talk about it too.
I mean, I know.
Have you seen me on The Apprentice? Celebrity Apprentice.
I know what it's about. Like when my in-laws talk about it, I know what that's about. I know that is about the fact there's a black guy running the country, and it's just every day that just brings them closer and closer to some sort of an embolism. For Trump. I mean, I guess it's maybe for – I don't even know that it's for ratings for the TV show as such. I think it is just for the Trump brand. I mean, because it's – I think it's easy to forget that, you know, he does the TV show, but he's also got – I mean, the guy owns like 700 businesses. And I mean, it's to whatever extent just that huge T can become emblazoned in the world consciousness, I think that for him, there really is no downside to this because he's clearly not going to run for president.
On Craig Ferguson last night, one of the things he talked about is he did make the point that Trump would like to be president. And this is a man who had a casino go bankrupt,
yeah,
which is something that's impossible to do. So now he's saying, I want to be the president of your country. No, we don't even want you to hold the jackets.
Well, and I think it's sort of funny that he wants to be president. I don't think he has any idea what that job actually is. He wants to be Donald Trump of this country.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, you're already Donald Trump. Come on. So anyway, speaking to reporters shortly after he showed off the birth certificate, Obama said that he knows some people still won't be satisfied.
What cut is this?
This Obama 4.
Now, I know that there's going to be a segment of people for which no matter what we put out, this issue will not be put to rest. But I'm speaking to the vast majority of the American people, as well as to the press. We do not have time for this kind of silliness.
See, that's a great, well-crafted phrase right there. I don't know if he wrote that or if there was a speechwriter behind that phrase, but when he says that I'm speaking out of the vast majority of the country as well as the press, that is a statement that is simultaneously inclusive and yet also exclusionary to exactly the right group of people in those respective categories. Because if you are on the we need to see the birth certificate, he wasn't really born here side, immediately it marginalizes you.
Dear non-crazy Americans, I'd like to speak to you.
That's the sort of thing that I think you labor over every single word because you got to go out and you got to say it in just the right way.
It's interesting in the clip how he's dropping his G's.
Oh, yeah. Well, he does that when he wants to be folksy.
He's definitely got the folksy, I am one of you, I am not the wonky kid.
That's well,
who's smarter than everybody else.
It's not unlike the Oprah does the same thing. Whenever Oprah wants to sort of get her girlfriend on, she immediately cranks up like the Southern accent.
I don't think she means getting her girlfriend on the way I would mean it.
Obama.
You don't read the same tabloids I do.
Obama becomes folksier and folksier though. The lower the mean income of the demographic to which he is speaking.
He's not alone, by the way. Let's not forget. Here's a little Hillary Clinton.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far.
Yeah. Awesome.
That is just offensive.
So the president says this.
I don't throw anything away. I keep everything.
The president says this debate has gotten ridiculous and distracting.
I have to say that over the last 2.5 years, I have watched with bemusement. I've been puzzled at the degree to which this thing just kept on going.
So here's there's one more, right?
We have Donald Trump saying he had no apologies.
Today, I'm very proud of myself because I've accomplished something that nobody else has been able to accomplish. I was just informed while on the helicopter that our president has finally released a birth certificate.
See, here's it's just impossible for me to dislike him or to just dislike any of this because it's just so patently absurd that it's like...
I was riding on my unicorn to Trump Tower and...
I mean, I really just...
It was all me. I did this.
But that's the thing is like whether or not that is actually the case. And he clearly was just, he was sort of not even the final straw. It's like he just happened to be the latest guy to come by and, and drop something in the request box, in the suggest. And then they went, well, OK, we'll do that. And so he's taking credit for it. So he's just kind of batting cleanup. But the brilliant thing is that whether or not it's actually true that he prompted this and to whatever degree he was or was not responsible, and it wasn't, he didn't contribute, I think, to the release of this any more than anybody else in the crazy section of America. He has masterfully just stepped in and just sort of picked up the credit and just completely positioned himself at the apex of it, which is genius.
And I know many of my progressive friends are worried about 2012, but people, we're talking about Donald Trump as a serious Republican candidate for president. They've got nobody.
I mean, that's unless they got somebody secretly waiting in the wings who's, a fantastic and brilliant choice, which they don't.
Well, I mean, the best candidate they have is just in terms of like who I might actually as a liberal think about voting for is Mitch Daniels, who's the governor of Indiana and is all about, has said, let's not talk about the social stuff. We need to declare a truce on the social stuff because what matters is the economy. That's all people care about. He's getting you probably don't know who I'm talking about, and that tells you something, that we're talking about Donald Trump.
I just – when I hear Trump do this, I remember this I remember this moment that happened in, I guess, 91 or 92. When did the Berlin Wall come down? 91? It was like – but it was 90 or 91. I mean, it was like – it was because I was – I think I was leaving high school or just out of high school. But Crosby, Stills, and Nash, of all people, they had written some song, I think, years before. And it was a song about the Berlin Wall and about about freedom and oppressed peoples and blah, blah, blah. But it was a song called Chipping Away. And so fast forward to 1991 when the Berlin Wall comes down. And immediately somebody must have just gotten on like the Klaxon phone to somebody and just been, to the Learjet. Because I swear to God, like 5 or 6 hours after the Berlin Wall started to come down, Crosby, Stills, and Nash just appeared somewhere. And they just like – there was a film crew with them, and they just stood like literally on top of like pieces of rubble of the Berlin Wall, and they were like singing this song, Chipping Away, and then released it as a video. And meanwhile, like all of the sort of the Berliners are just sort of looking at them with these kind of puzzled looks on their faces, like who is the fat man? Why does he sing? And that's kind of what Donald Trump is doing here. It's sort of like there's this thing that's already happening, so I'm just going to stick myself in front of it between it and the cameras so I can just get some last-minute credit for the thing I did not do.
He also says now that he wants to take a look at it for himself before he makes the final decision on whether it's real.
What cut is this?
This is 7.
I may actually not have that one. Let me see here. Hold on. Let me check really quickly. That may be a piece that I don't have. What is it? 20.
Don and I could probably do it for you.
Probably. Yeah. I don't think. I think I somehow stopped at 6 cuts.
Well, actually,
there.
I believe I have. He says his new thing. Oh yeah. The quote was, I believe, he says, "We have to look at it. We have to see. Is it real? Is it proper? It is rather amazing that all of a sudden it materializes." So now he's saying, though, however, that there are questions about President Obama's background. Continuing, about now he's going, but what about his schooling? What about his school record? Trump said, the word is Obama was a terrible student when he went to Occidental. Then he gets to Columbia. He then gets to Harvard. I don't know why he doesn't release those records. Why doesn't he release his college records?
I pulled this off the smoking gun this morning. So this is the thing that I mentioned. I was woken up again by that Drudge Report alarm, which is just the air raid siren. And so I always think that the world is ending, or just that there's going to be like locusts.
Really get rid of that.
Seriously, it's. I mean, they might as well just have a thing saying like, the seventh seal has been broken. So I reached over and I was like, oh, is the world ending? I don't want to get up. And it was a thing about, you know, Obama produces birth certificate or whatever. And then I go to Drudge, and the first link takes me to this message board, and I just pulled some of these.
Oh, God.
It's just brilliant. Let's see.
You get the highest class of only second only to never mind. You get a high class of commenters there on
this purported full certificate is clearly all caps a fake, which most any second-rate forger could replicate or create. There's lots of discrepancies. That's discrepancies with the less common CEES spelling at the end. And evidence of a layering technique in part to create this all caps forgery. The thing about Donald Trump, or D. Trump, as he is referred to here, that I really appreciate, says this poster, is his courage to actually pursue the truth. It seems like politicians that should pursue this lie are utterly intimidated by the PC crowd and the TV media, a plague upon all these collaborators.
Oh, that PC crowd.
And, you know, blah, 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 blah.
It's almost unfortunate. I mean, we talk about the PC crowd, and it is almost unfortunate that we have evolved as a culture past the point where you're not allowed to simply say, I am uncomfortable with the fact that a black man is president.
Right. Because at least then you would sort of know. I mean, that would be more efficient.
If you were just allowed to be a racist, we wouldn't have to talk about any of these other really tangential, distracting issues that, when you boil them down to their core, amount to you're a racist.
It just seems like if we could bottom line the whole thing, you're right, then we could all just get
you
on with our day.
You just don't like black people. Okay, let's just acknowledge that.
We talked just the other day about our parents and family members and people making horrible racist jokes.
Yes.
And the fact that, you know, you would think we had evolved as a society to the point where people would realize, you know, it's inappropriate for me to say these things. But the thing is that I think a lot of people do know it's inappropriate to say these things. It still doesn't stop them from being ignorant idiots and obviously kind of stupid and crazy. But at least on some level, the tiny lizard brain that's trying to protect them and keep them safe goes, make up some other reason. Don't say that.
Well, I think it's because I think it's understood at this point in our society. I think in the United States we're in this weird evolutionary interstitial stage where we just haven't left a lot of that the crap behind. Yet at the same time, we have learned that you don't want to exhibit those traits outwardly. And I really do think in some evolutionary way, it just comes down to the same reason that, like, you know, you just don't want to date a guy covered in sores because, you know, that's probably not the right guy to give you healthy offspring that are going to be making it to the next generation, you know. And so if a guy is covered in intellectual sores, probably it's equally off-putting. And so as a result, people have just learned to mask all of that and just, you know.
And then I'm assuming they justify it by saying, oh, those damn liberals who aren't allowing us regular folks to speak our mind.
I will say, by the way, now lest anybody just accuse us of being completely one-sided about this. I mean, it's not like there wasn't precedent for this a couple years ago when Dan Rather was just holding up some stuff from a Kinko's and saying, this proves that George W. Bush never served, and it was just like made by, you know, it was just made by like some guy, you know, at a DocuMart and just dropped off in a paper bag at the front. And they went, no, it's definitive proof. So, I mean... I guess I should just say, like, I have no more. Speaking for myself, I have to be honest and say, I have no more proof that Obama's birth certificate is real than I had about the George W. Bush things.
It would be kind of hilarious if it turned out that it wasn't.
Oh, I've said that. I've been saying that forever.
It is a Kenyan plot.
Yes.
It would be awesome if it turned out that it really was true that he was born somewhere else, just because I can't think of anything. I can't think of any way for the story to get crazier. It was like I said for the longest time that I would give all I owned. I would give up everything that I possessed and half of all I would ever possess in my life if Elvis would actually turn up alive. just to see like the collective just mind shatter happening just across the world, it would be worth it, and then some.
I would really like it if Obama actually just finally called a press conference and said, okay, you got me, you win. And then he ripped off the rubber Obama mask, and he's like a lizard guy, like in They Live.
My whole thing about the birth certificate is because, I mean, again, you do have to say that really the only thing we have to go on as far as the validity and veracity of Barack Obama's birth certificate and his birth records is the word of the government, which is not like unimpeachable, so to speak. But my thing is this. If nothing else, leaving all of that aside and just, you know, like logic and common sense, the proof to me that Barack Obama was born here is that he ran against Hillary Clinton in the primaries and the Clintons didn't come up with anything on him. And if you can survive being routed by the Clinton, if the Clintons cannot find or fabricate something about you to get you out of the race, then you're about as clean as you're going to get. So that's, I mean, I just take it as an article of faith that if it was out there, they would have found it. And they wouldn't be holding it in their back pocket right now. That'd be out. So here's a question, though, about birth certificates. I have to, at the risk of just sounding like a bad punch on the whole thing, I don't know where my birth certificate is. I have no idea. Is that a thing that the state has, or would I have that?
Were you actually born here?
What do you mean here?
Are you actually an American, Rick Emerson?
Maybe. I'm just saying, like, would the state of Washington have that, or would I have it, or would my mom have it?
Your mom probably has a copy of it.
And does it, is it, I really honestly, I was thinking about this morning, I actually honestly don't know.
Well, your mother should have the original.
Yeah, and you can get a copy of it from Washington State.
So, but like the state does have it in a file somewhere. Okay. Because I was actually thinking about that. My mom referenced at one point that she had a copy of it in case I ever needed to do whatever. And I thought, well, that's not the original. Because then if you lost that, like you'd be screwed. What would the...
Well, I mean, you have, basically what they used to do is there was a birth certificate that was... It actually looked like a fancy certificate. And then they've also got...
Congratulations, you were born.
And then they have all of that information, you know, on file, you know,
at the state. Is this that has my footprints on it?
Maybe.
That's your birth record. That's not necessarily
the
birth certificate.
Then what's the difference?
I think the birth record is the thing that's on file with the hospital where you were born, not with the state.
Okay.
And so, but like here in Oregon, my husband had to get a copy of his birth certificate because he didn't have one. And you just go and you give them your particulars, your name and where you were born and your date of birth, and you show them some ID. And I think you have to give them like your father's last name or something like that. And then you go and you sit for like about a half an hour, and they show up and they have a brand spanking new one that they just printed out for you with a big purple stamp on it to make sure that you can show that this itself is not the photocopy. And then there you go, brand new birth certificate.
The government documents are mystifying to me. Here's another thing I never understand. I never get the whole thing of the Social Security card. What the hell is that for? Why do I have that?
I think I don't know why. There was a time when you needed the actual card.
But you don't, because it says on it in big letters, not to be used for purposes of identification. It actually says on it, you can't use it to identify yourself. So I have no idea why they gave that to me.
Well, I know they used to take them and photocopy them when you would get a job. Mm-hmm. And now mostly they just take down the number. I want to show you, though, I'm very proud of this. I still have my original Social Security card that I got when I was like 10 years old. My mom signed me up for Social Security. And it was the first time I ever had to sign my name as a signature, and I had no idea how.
Oh, wow. That's cute.
And that was like 70 years ago.
I was going to ask, how old is that? But then wow. You're sure this isn't because you pawned something at a speakeasy? Jesus.
And then we got in the buggy and... and went out and got us a new record for our phonograph, which had just been invented.
For a piece of bark, this is pretty pliable.
Yeah. I can't hold on to like a pair of sunglasses for more than a month. I'm just amazed that I actually like still have my Social Security card from when I was a child.
I have mine somewhere, and I think I laminated it because I was a huge nerd and I loved laminating things.
A laminator?
No, but my mom had one at the hospital, and so if I had something that I needed laminated, such as my Federal Communications Commission radio operator's license, which I got which you don't have to get anymore. These kids today with their ham broadcasting and their chat rooms and so forth, they don't have to do it. But you had to when I was coming into radio, you had to get a license from the FCC. I think I was like the last generation that had to do that. And I was so proud of it. And I immediately just, I couldn't, I think I actually took the bus like across town to visit my mother at the hospital just so she could laminate my FCC license, which I then just, which I carried around in my pocket in the vain hope that I could impress some girl with it. You know, other guys have a car. I have this thing from the FCC that says that like I have a Class C operator's license at a radio station, which unsurprisingly impressed like no one.
You know, the first date I ever went on, I was in high school, I was a freshman in high school, and a guy took me to show me his model airplanes.
Really?
That he flew.
Aww.
Was it radio control airplanes?
Oh, not like model airplanes that he built, but
no.
Like actual like ones that he flew around the backyard.
Yeah, we actually had to. We went out to like this field where us and a whole bunch of like 50-year-old men were flying model airplanes, and I thought, okay, well, this is. I thought he was cute, and he was cool, and he rode a dirt bike, and I thought he was cool. But it was one of those things that I look back now and I think, oh, how cute. That was the thing he went to try and impress me.
Your first date was with the kid from Rushmore. That's great. So sweet.
That's a fantastic reference. That's the best reference we've had all week. Well done. Well, this is a good time actually to segue. So what is I know there's news apart from the birth certificate and the whatnot, and there's probably stuff happening at, like within 30 miles of here.
You know, these are troubled times we're living in. It's really, we got.
Is that going to be your column this week? You're just going to get your winchel on?
Yeah, I'm actually off the rest of the week, so.
Excellent.
news, kids today.
Yeah. There was all I know is that there's so tell me about the thing with the joint terrorism task force. That's not like a thing they didn't just create that because of the kid at the Christmas with the bombing and
no.
What is that?
So in many U.S. cities they have these joint terrorism task force, which are a cooperative effort led by the FBI, but it's a law enforcement team that includes local police officers, sheriffs, state police officers, the Port Authority cops in some places, and the feds. And they work together to investigate potential terrorism cases, to prevent terrorism cases, to investigate terrorism cases that have already happened. Portland, Oregon state law bars police agencies from investigating people strictly because of their political or religious beliefs. Right. So, say, in the 1970s, 1960s, you couldn't go investigate someone simply because they are a member of the Black Panther Party. Can't go investigate someone now. Can't go tap somebody's phones just because they worship at a mosque.
Presbyterians.
That's right. That's right.
Because that's always who it is.
The wasps
always
are the deadliest ones. Absolutely. With their gin and tonics in hand. The damage you can do with a 9-iron. So Portland, almost 10 years ago, city council members in Portland began raising concerns about the JTTF's mission, about how Portland officers are being used, and about the lack of oversight that the civilians who run the police bureau here, you know, we have civilian oversight of our cops, that the civilians had over what our cops were doing when they worked on federal task forces. There have been, in other cities, cases in which the JTTF appears to have overstepped its bounds, at least when it comes to what we consider proper police work in Oregon.
So is the joint task force, is that like, are they federal agents that come in and they sort of, for lack of a better word, like deputize local cops and they say, hey, we're here, you got to help us out?
Yeah, I mean, the cops who are assigned to the JTTF work out of the FBI offices in most places.
And then the citizen review board or the citizen oversight board, what do they actually do? Like, what power do they have? They can't.
Yeah.
Can they kick cops off the force if somebody, you know? I just don't know how that. I don't know what the actual parameters of that.
Well,
are.
My understanding is that there is that if you are the police chief of an agency whose officers are members of the JTTF, you will get semi-regular updates on what they are working on. The challenge is that a lot of the things that the JTTF works on. Are classified.
Wow. Okay. All right.
They are investigations that are works in progress, and so you, Mr. Mayor, there's only so much I'm going to tell you about that I want to tell you, that I need to tell you, that I'm legally required to tell you, that I'm legally capable of telling you. And so the fear is, what if you have Portland officers doing things that violate state law when they're working for the feds?
Under the color of working for the national. Okay.
Right. Tom Potter, who is a former police chief, who was the mayor of Portland from 2004 to 2008, when he took office, he basically went to the feds and said, I need to know what they're working on.
So he tried to work out a compromise with the FBI agent in charge in Portland, in which he would have high enough security clearance that he would get regular updates on what they were doing. The Fed said no, they couldn't work out a deal, so Portland withdrew its officers from the JTTF. As a result, the December foiled Christmas tree bombing plot, the police chief of Portland knew that there was an investigation and knew that things were going on, but civilian city council members, including the mayor, who was the police commissioner at the time, didn't know what was happening until after the fact, which prompted Dan Saltzman, who is a city commissioner who some people have said is going to run for mayor. I'm a little doubtful of that, but who cast the only no vote against pulling out of the JTTF in 2005 prompted him to come forward and say, hey, we need to be a part of this thing again. Let's vote to rejoin the thing.
Well, what is the downside if we're not part of it? In other words, it's not like the feds are not going to investigate stuff here. If they think there's some nefarious activity happening, they're going to come and they're going to look into it whether or not we're helping them out.
Right, which I mean,
is it just like a battle over like is it just people wanting to be in the know?
Well, one of the lessons of 9/11 is sort of common sense, is that the more people you have sharing more information, the more likely you are to catch things before they happen. And so what the feds say is, we want you to be a part of the JTTF because just common sense investigative practice, you're going to be closer to the ground on a lot of this stuff than we are. You're going to hear things we don't hear. We're going to hear things you don't hear. We should all be literally at the same table sharing this stuff. What the city of Portland has said in the last few years, what the ACLU says, what people who have concerns about the Fed's record on civil rights violations, is that we can share information without putting our officers in a position where we can't directly monitor what kinds of investigative work they're doing.
Because at some point, I think that the fear is just that if you're doing anything that is sort of classified, that at some point the curtain comes down and it no longer is a transparent process.
Right, and that you're going to have Portland officers who are in a position to do things that under Oregon law they're not allowed to do. They're not going to be able to tell their bosses.
Because even if they said somewhere local, we'll have the Citizens Commission, they themselves can – they'll have access. They'll understand. They'll know what's going on, but they just can't tell anybody else about it. Then that would be the issue, because
right.
at some point there's a water's edge where the information doesn't get to the people at large.
Right.
So,
right.
All right. So what is I don't know. And so where – so what is
so,
we – what
so
are we –
So the mayor has came out with today and apparently has at least three, maybe four votes on the city council for a weird compromise that would get Portland officers more involved without actually, I'm making air quotes now, rejoining the JTTF.
All right.
So I'm not sure that it amounts to a huge change over what we're doing right now, but it lets everybody stand up in front of TV cameras and say, look, we're working together.
We found common ground.
Exactly.
That really is – that is an art form. We were actually just talking in the break about, you know, the politicians and, you know, people – the art form of having to please a lot of people, and that it's a much tougher job, I think, than people realize, because that is like a – that is a perfectly honed skill in and of itself. The finding common ground, and then when you don't, presenting it to the public as though you have, and as though you have found a solution that placates and pleases everyone and addresses the needs of all parties involved, when in fact everybody has gotten shafted, except to the extent that they're able, to sort of feel like their ass is sufficiently covered.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a silly debate, but I do think it's largely a semantic debate.
Right.
Because Portland is the only city that has declined to be involved in the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And it is a very sort of Oregon stand to take. And what you're saying is we don't trust the feds.
It surprises me that we would be the only ones. You would think that, you know, you'd think you'd get your San Francisco,
your Berkeley.
Your Berkeley, yeah, that would just say that they wanted a part of that. So, all right. So there you go. I liked it better when we were talking about World of Warcraft.
Well, wasn't there also a little bit back when they decided to pull out of the task force that there was also some of that situation where we were to give them all information that they wanted, but they, you know, obviously they didn't have to give us any information, even on the cases that, you know, they're supposed to be working on. So,
yeah, it's about, you know, the beauty of our form of government is that we have civilians, just not particular to Portland, but in general in the United States, is that we have civilian oversight of law enforcement. And just like we have civilian oversight of the military. And there is, as we saw repeatedly on Battlestar Galactica, there, you know, there is sort of a constant healthy tension between what you do as a quasi-military law enforcement investigative organization and how democracy works, which is by
shining
lights.
The Wire.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
We'll see as we've. So Dawn is actually. So she's now about a third of the way into season three, and one of my things. I had my last general manager at CBS. He said something that you will hear a lot of people say, that there is no situation in life which cannot be explained by a quote from The Godfather, and it's like. But the same thing is like The Wire. Like there is no interaction among humans, and there is no certainly no political dynamic and no intersocial dynamic that cannot be explained or given an analog in something with The Wire, and it is even despite people's best intentions. I mean, ultimately, everybody just because that's the way it has to be is just kind of looking to cover their own ass. As long as they don't end up being the guy on camera, you know, who's being excoriated, by a councilman or by a reporter or by some sort of investigative. You know, that really is the overriding concern of everybody. And so, if it actually benefits, you know, society or Portland as sort of an ancillary, you know, as a bonus, then great. But you know, other than that. So, all right. What time? Jesus, it's 3:00.
Yeah.
What the hell?
We've been talking about important world issues.
Yeah, I suppose. It's
It can't all be penis size and South Park.
It can. It just shouldn't be. Oh, no, but it can be ovaries. Let me just read you this thing about ovaries. I said early on, I said that normally, here's the thing. You've got to know that we've had a very strange week on the show, even by our standards, because we've had... We've discussed a lot of things, and I won't sully your ears by repeating them all now, but it's only Wednesday, and we've had any number of discussions on this program, which are really just – things that should not be. So normally we try to get those conversations done and out of the way before you get into the studio because we don't want to shame ourselves and horrify you.
That doesn't work very often, does it?
No, it really – well, you want to hear the stuff that we don't talk about with you in the room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We tone it down for you.
Dawn had this dream about making out with
her
father.
Tell her.
So, I'm sorry. I was just going to give this one example. That's not even,
was this a happy dream?
Is there any other kind? That's the example you picked.
No, there are other things, but that seems like the most innocuous discussion that we've had.
Was it a disturbing dream or was it a happy dream when you were in it?
Well, I can't. While I was having it, it was pretty sexy. Then I woke up and realized what I had been dreaming about. Went ah, and then it wasn't sexy anymore.
And you took a giant Q-tip and just wiped your brain out. And
yeah.
I'm just saying the only reason I'm just picking the first thing that came to mind that is the kind of discussion
I have to ask another question. Was this your father? Like young, it was like young Elvis, old Elvis. Was this young daddy, old daddy?
Good question. I didn't ask that.
No, it was. It was youngish father. It was like about 40-ish, 30,
that's
late 30s,
less weird.
40-ish.
Okay.
So I actually had mentioned this story because it was that was the age at which, you know, often seen like shirtless around the house fixing stuff or working out in the backyard.
Rugged daddy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Rugged daddy stuff.
Rugged daddy stuff, the Dawn Taylor story. Anyway, so we had a lot of discussions like that the last couple of days, and we just kept saying, and every time we would finish, we would just say, well, at least Anna Griffin wasn't here. But then today, as we get ready to do the show, I just had all of the stuff that I kept putting aside, said, no, we got to wait, and I got to talk about that when she's in the room. And we won't have time to get through a lot of it, but I will say, I don't know why I wanted to wait for you to be in the room for this, but I figured that it was just worth repeating. So I got this spam, I guess, and I think I must be on some mailing list for this kind of thing. But it's like a teleseminar sort of a thing. It's like if your company won't pay to send you to the thing where Rudy Giuliani and Bill Cosby and, you know, and Norman Schwarzkopf talk about, like, you know, being the best you can be,
which only cost $1.
It seems astounding that someone could not afford to go to that. But if maybe, you know, you just didn't have the time, or you were out of town or something, you want to go to something like that. There's a teleconference about motivation. This is specifically for the lady folk. So. It is. It's run by a woman named.
I would go to the teleconference on motivation, but I just can't be bothered.
It's by a woman named Kathleen something or other, but it's a teleseminar called "Work That Lights Your Fire." An inspiring telemarketer. First of all, nothing that has like telemarketer is inspiring at all in any way except to revulsion. An inspiring teleseminar led by Kathleen Slattery something hyphenated name. It's called Work That Lights Your Fire, but I swear to God, the tagline for this, and I am not making this up, the tagline for this is The Kathleen Show, which is the name of her teleseminar, Grabbing Life by the Ovaries. Which seems like the most unpleasant and painful place to be grabbing your life.
Yeah, that would not be good.
It is, although it is, it's more descriptive, and it's a level up from grabbing life by the balls.
Well, because it takes more work, I would imagine.
It's messier.
I don't want anyone grabbing me by my internal organs. Yeah. Any of them. So
the leverage required to effect such a grab, and then the, you know, there's...
It feels like the thing, kind of thing that could only happen when you were asleep, really. Because otherwise you would...
Yeah.
You'd know.
And I would imagine...
You'd fight them off.
That's the thing that you would vote no on.
I do not like that, no.
I'm again this.
What are you after? My spleen? What are you doing? I'm grabbing you by the ovaries. Well, stop.
I put off that doctor's appointment whenever I can, so I'm not voluntarily letting somebody else do it.
This is why it came up earlier today, because you were talking about that place where the Dr. Nick guy wanted to shove a microphone inside you.
Well, and the doctor...
You had to be there, I guess. It's...
Yeah.
What did he want to hear?
It's the sound of the ocean. I don't know.
The ancient chanting of primitive peoples.
Sometimes I have no idea what we're talking about here. There are moments. Let's see. And finally, this is sort of apropos of nothing, but I wanted to mention this. You sent this to me, I think, maybe yesterday or possibly the day before. Let's see. This is from Dawn. And the great thing about this is, the subject line of the email was just, because I know you want to know. And it says, Dimension Films announces start of production on Piranha sequel entitled Piranha 3DD.
Yes.
Dateline New York, after earning rave reviews from... I instinctively disbelieved this, even though I liked the film. After earning rave reviews from top critics and wild cheers from audiences around the country, that part I believe.
And I would like to mention when I saw my friend Scott Weinberg, who's a film critic, he had also gotten this press release, and he mentioned on Twitter, he said, yes, after you didn't actually screen it for us, but we gave you raves.
I mean, that's the thing is normally when a movie is not screened for critics, it's usually because the movie is bad. And then the critics sometimes, even if the movie is good, in a fit of pique, will just not talk about it or they'll just trash it.
They've stopped screening a vast majority, I think, of horror films, though, because they realize that there's nothing to be gained by it.
Well, there's nothing to be gained and
It doesn't affect their box office at all. And a lot of critics just don't like horror just out of the gate anyway.
Well, genre pictures are really, I don't want to say they're critic-proof, but I mean, the degree to which critics can help or hurt a very niche film like that is negligible.
But I think it really does hurt some movies, though, that they don't screen it, because, like, I think Piranha did really well, but I think it could have done a lot better because it was really good.
It was legitimately good. That's the thing.
When James Gunn's Slither came out, that was screened on a Thursday night before it opened so that nobody could, like, you know, get early reviews out, and it was great. It was really, really good.
I think it has to do, actually, it might be proportionally, I think it might be related to the amount of pre-buzz that a picture releases, or the picture has, because there's that fear that you're going to replicate the snakes on a plane thing, where you get the huge, huge advance hype, and then somebody lets the air out of the tire immediately, they go, it's not really very good, and then, you know, and then sometimes they figure they've only got the one good weekend anyway before the fall off happens, and if you screw yourself out of that one good weekend, then you got nothing. So they don't risk it, especially with a film like with Piranha 3D, which, again, you got to figure that, you know, even though it actually ended up being a pretty great film, the first weekend audience for that, you know, they were going to go regardless. I mean, they were really not going to be swayed one way or the other. Did you see who's directing it, though? It's being directed by John Gulager. And John Gulager is the guy who is in Project Greenlight. He was, I guess, the second season of Project Greenlight, or maybe it was the third season. But they were doing a genre picture, they were doing a horror film. And he's the guy who got the gig to do the horror film on Project Greenlight. Also, he is Clu Gulager's son. And Clu Gulager is totally going to be in Piranha 3DD. Which is genius. It's starring a whole bunch of other sort of no-names.
And announced today, a follow-up press release that I received an email, added to the cast, Gary Busey.
Really?
Yes.
Because the first one had Ving Rhames and then what's-her-name from Leaving Las Vegas, Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah.
Which is just – have you seen Piranha 3D?
Sadly, I have
do
not.
Do you like horror films?
I do.
I mean,
it's actually a lot of fun. Okay. It's really good.
The best comment that I ever saw about Piranha 3D, which I was – and I think this is the thing. I've seen it twice. I saw it in 3D, which was beautiful, and I saw it at home in 2D, which is still great. I mean, it's a movie that doesn't – it doesn't rise or fall in the 3D. I wish I knew who said this. I think it was somebody in Ain't It Cool who said that Piranha 3D is what you were hoping Snakes on a Plane would be. It really is. It is – it sounds so trite just to call it a fun movie, but it's fantastically fun. I mean, it really is just hilarious and sort of gory in a kind of not off-putting way, and
more than competently made. I mean, that's this is the thing that I kept telling people about Burlesque, for example. It's like surprisingly well made and well acted when you think about what it is you're going in for, you know, and so. you set the bar like here, and then when everything's like up here, you're kind of like, really?
Wow.
Good. Well, good for you, movie.
There are really some beautiful shots in Piranha 3D because they've got it's all. I mean, there's some CGI done on the actual piranha themselves, but it's all shot outside, and I don't know where they filmed it. But
this one's being shot in North Carolina, so they may have shot the first one there.
Really is. It's a great looking film, and the 3D effects actually when I saw them were really good as well because I think they shot it for 3D. I don't think they did the retrofitting thing, and then it had Richard Dreyfuss in it.
Yes, one of the best homages.
It was not embarrassing. And the thing is, and it wasn't cringe-inducing because it's like, you know, he's there because he's the Jaws guy, and you go like, oh God, really? And that it was great.
Yes,
it was. And here's the other thing, final thing about this is I love the original Piranha, the Joe Dante Piranha from 1978. I'm a big fan of that
written
film.
Written by John Sayles.
That's right. You were because I didn't know that. You reminded me of that. And it has what's his name? Kevin McCarthy. Mm-hmm. It's got Kevin McCarthy and the chick who played Liesel in The Sound of Music. Heather Menzies. And then the guy who I always think is James Brolin.
Tommy Lee Jones.
No. Fail and Keenan Wynn. Anyway, I'm a big fan of the 1978 Piranha. You know who else is a big fan of that movie? Steven Spielberg. Because the studio, because Universal tried to kill it because it was such an obvious Jaws ripoff. And Spielberg actually saw a rough cut. He was like, this movie is awesome. And he totally gave it his Bradford Dillman totally gave it his blessing. Anyway.
Bradford, you confused Bradford
I always confuse James Brolin and Bradford Dillman. I don't know
that's
why that is. It's a thing that I do. Okay. It's part of my quirky charm.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing here.
And Dick Miller. Dick Miller is one of these guys. He actually lived in my neighborhood when I lived in Hollywood in the 80s. I used to see him at the grocery store all the time. And he's one of those guys that known to a lot of people as the owner of the malt shop in Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh, right. Okay.
But he was in like scores of American International pictures in the 60s, like horror films, drag racing movies, beach party flicks.
Were you just referring to the Peach Pit?
The Peach Pit.
Okay. More than just a malt shop.
I know, but I couldn't remember the name of it. It was the Peach Pit. Thank you. Sorry.
It's only the place where K's Choice came to play their biggest hits. Yes. Also in the original in Piranha 78, Barbara Steele, Scream Queen and B movie star Barbara Steele, was in that as well. And oh my God! And then the eating Raoul guy.
Wallace Shawn?
No. God, my brain has gone soft today.
No, Paul Bartel.
Paul Bartel.
See, that's the thing I do is I always put Wallace Shawn and Paul Bartel in the same shoebox.
Yeah, he's also in that. It really is. It's quite a film if you haven't seen the 78 Piranha, but Piranha 3D, not bad at all. A couple questions for Anna Griffin. First of all, Cheryl wants it to be known. This is odd. We were talking about avatars earlier because here's the thing. It's like my wife has sort of taken over the Xbox in our house just because I haven't had time to play it in a long time, and she – when I got it, it was obviously a gift, but it was a follow up to having the original Xbox, which I played a lot. And then she just sort of, you know, it's not like she's not into video games. She just didn't really play it all that often. And then I forget what the game was. I think it might have been Settlers of Catan that when she started playing Settlers of Catan, she was just like, you know, it was suddenly she realized, you know, that it wasn't there was more than just shooting giant spiders in the face or whatever. So she has really just become a fiend for the Xbox. But she is in charge of customizing all of the avatars and whatnot because of that. And the avatars look astonishingly like me, which is neither good nor bad. It's just sort of odd. She spends a lot of time like picking out like exactly the right pair of like spectacles and the right wristwatch and like was trying to buy shoes or something the other day.
That's a weird sort of love right there.
It was really weird. I mean, I guess it's sort of flattering in a nice kind of way. But it's anyway, then Cheryl says, I made a Wii character that looks exactly like you. You play poorly on my Wii baseball team. So that's odd.
Like you, you?
What do you mean?
Well, you said you had a question. I thought you had a question for Anna Griffin. So well, why would Cheryl make an avatar of Anna Griffin?
No. This,
for,
I'll get,
why wouldn't
for
Cheryl
base, make an avatar of Anna Griffin?
No. I'll get to that in a second. But I'm just saying, as a side note, I was looking at the messages here. And Cheryl notes that I'm assuming it's to me. She says, I'm assuming it's directed at me because she says, you play poorly. And then she puts shocking after that sarcasm. So
it's a lot better than I made a sim character who looks like you and I'm continually drowning him in the pool.
Setting him on fire as we speak. But yesterday, I believe we had.
I ordered a real doll that looks just like you.
Could I have a lock of your hair to go along with that?
Okay. Anyway, who was that? There was a comedian that had a real doll made of herself last year. There was somebody, I forget, some Sarah Silverman type who had, you know, an edgy modern day jokester who had the whole shtick was she had a real doll made of herself. And she went to it was actually kind of interesting. She went to the factory, watched it being made and watched it, you know, all of the various hairs being stitched into place. It was
creepy.
It was very strange.
I could see doing that, though. I could, if I had the money, I could see.
Of
just,
you?
Well, yes, I could. Well, except then it would be chubby, which would be even weirder. But If I was an attractive young thing, I could see doing that just to have it and have it sit in my house and I'd dress it in my clothes and sit it on my couch.
That's why some of us have children.
That's why some of us have an inside voice. Why? I don't understand. Is it just so like when you're older, you could be like, and then I was a dish?
No, I just think it would be awesome when people come over to my house and I say, hey, come on in. And there I am across the room sitting on the couch.
Have you met Dawn?
I have to go to the kitchen. Talk to little Dawn for a minute while I'm gone.
Exactly.
The Tomax to your Zaymot.
I mean, it's not like I'd be, you know.
What did they say about me while I was gone?
Doing
Dawn?
Weird, creepy things with it, but you know,
uh-huh, yeah.
I think just having it is creepy.
Yeah, you've passed that event horizon.
Have you been to my house?
Anyway, so Cheryl says I made a wee character that looks exactly like you, and I think she means me. She says you play poorly in my wee baseball team. Shocking. So that's, I mean, I don't know. It's creepy. It's just a little odd. I mean, unless she just has run out of people to model her characters after. But yesterday we were having this discussion about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which came out of nowhere. I don't remember how we. It's because I was talking about Hooters, and I was talking about that PDA I used to have that would go to Hooters for lunch and would claim it was all because of the hot wings, which were great, and that he was exactly like he looked and talked just like Richard Wilkins, Mayor of Sunnydale. And so we had a whole discussion about best and worst Buffy villains. Anna Griffin in the back.
Oh, the mayor. Okay. I think the mayor.
Best villain? Yeah, that was what totally. I said. I voted for him. Angel, close second, but the mayor is far and away the best villain.
No, they, I mean, you know, they defanged Angel.
The worst villain in the series?
Oh, I mean, the nerds.
The trio.
Who barely.
Yeah,
who
see,
barely.
And Dawn actually was, you were pro trio.
I am. I liked them. I did.
I liked them. I don't think they're, you don't build that much of a season around them, though.
See, I thought Adam was the worst villain just because I thought that entire storyline just kind of
but
went
I thought,
nowhere.
See, I thought the conclusion of that storyline, though, where they have to, well, I'm not going to spoil it for people.
No.
But
it was on like 10 years ago.
Conclusion of that season rocked.
Well, spoilers, lol, ahead. So, I mean, what is it? All I remember is, didn't they end up paving over the whole place and blowing it up or something?
They had to combine forces together. Willow does some sort of spell, and they combine forces to fight so that Buffy has the strength of all of them to fight Adam. And then that's what prompts the episode after that where they're all dreaming, and that's when Buffy meets the original Slayer.
Oh.
I am so geeky.
Okay, wow. No, that's fine. Well... No, the other day somebody was having some conversation about something and they were wondering at some Buffy artifact and like without even looking up I was just like Gem of Amara and just you know so I you know you're it's okay I just don't remember to be fair I actually don't remember a lot of what happened after season 3 because I think because the first 3 seasons I watched repeatedly and the seasons 4 through 7 I just watched – I mean I watched all the way through when they were on and then I just sort of watched them if they happened to be on or if there was a particular favorite that I wanted – you know, an episode – like if I wanted to watch Hush or something, which I think was season 4, I would go back and watch that. But I don't think I've actually watched sequentially 4 through 7 since they aired originally.
I have actually watched this is so sad. I've seen all of Buffy through from start to finish sequentially probably like 4 times because it used to be on I think it might have been Sci-Fi Network every single
every day.
It was every day.
And I was, you know, freelance writer. I was at home.
It was like 10 a.m. or
every
something.
Every day.
Yeah.
And I would watch Buffy every single day. That was part of my daily ritual. And it was like I did that. And then there's that whole point where it's like, and we now have come to the conclusion of the entire series. And now the next day. And now here's the first episode again.
Right.
It's like, hooray. And I think I watched it straight through like 3 times in a row or something over the course of being unemployed slash freelance at home.
I thought they didn't do enough with Bad Willow. I thought she could have been, that could have been awesome. And it was just sort of, really? Love is the answer.
I liked, he was just a one shot bad guy, but I did really like the demon in Once More with Feeling.
Yeah, no, I was actually going to say.
I really loved him.
I forget his name, but
he was credited as Sweet, but I don't think they ever, in like the credits, but I don't think they ever mentioned him by name on the show.
Can I just say that here's the thing about that?
And yes, I know that. God, why do I know that?
Dawn, this is a place of openness. There's no shame here. There's no
who was it? But you know, it's like Anna just had one of those moments herself where you just hear
yourself talking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was it? Was it when Paul and Storm were in the studio? And one of them, so Paul and Storm were in the studio, and they were going to be performing at the Aladdin, and one of them said something really nerdy about something or other, and then they did the reflexive, like, I can't believe I know that, and we just sort of had, like, you probably haven't met us, but we're dorks, so.
I will say, who was the, what was the name of the she-demon who, the season that...
Glory?
I really like Glory, too.
Glory, again...
That whole season was great.
Had the potential, I thought, to be really great. Like with the Willow thing. But to me, those villains are all like the story there is missed opportunity, where they could have been really interesting. Like, the trio could have been really interesting, and I just don't feel it was executed.
Well, it's also hard on all of these shows, and this has happened in, like, everything from Buffy to Stargate. When you reach this escalating point with your bad guys, and you finally get to the point where you have your mortal characters battling gods,
right?
You're actually limiting yourself as far as what you can do story-wise because, you know, logically, she should have just been able to decimate them immediately. She's a freaking god.
Right.
And so it's kind of like then the workarounds around that story-wise, I think, end up like sort of weakening everything.
See, I would argue that you could have ended the show at the end of that season and it would have been a very satisfying.
Well, that was season 5, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is one of the things I should have asked, you know, we had Zach Whedon on the show, I don't know, a couple months ago. I should have asked Zach Whedon this because I who knows if we'll ever get a chance to talk to Joss Whedon, but this is the thing I want to know. Because I'm almost certain, I mean, I would bet you my bottom dollar that when Whedon planned out the show, I mean, whether that was at the very beginning or whether it was sort of as he went along, it seems like that show was so clearly meant to end at season 5.
Well, wasn't that after season 5 was when it made the move from...
I don't know if it was season 5 or even season 6 when they made the move from the WB to UPN. Mm-hmm. It was either season 5 or but it ended... I mean, it was like the whole, you know, Campbellian thing of like it ended with her sacrificing herself and completing the whole – and with blood atonement and completing the whole hero's journey. And it ends with that shot on her tombstone. And it really is – and she has – you know, and she has reached a – you know, she is, as Maslow would say, she is self-actualized because she has given herself for the greater good and for Dawn. So in – you know, sacrificing herself to save herself. And it's a whole thing. And it just seems so perfect. And I'm not saying there wasn't good stuff after that, but it seems like it was meant to – naturally, it wanted to end there.
Yeah, season 6 was much. I liked season. I mean, if you get rid of season 6, you lose once more the feeling, and you lose Bad Willow, and you lose what is a really good portrayal of depression and what depression feels.
Right.
I mean, that's basically what you watch in Buffy's arc in that season is she is just seriously depressed. But that season was just structurally an absolute mess.
Yeah, because if you get rid of that, you also miss awkward sex with Spike. And I think we could all have done without that.
And also when her and...
Building knocking down sex with Spike, yeah.
Her and Riley the Load just sitting there being covered in plants and, you know, turning into a terrarium while they're having, you know...
By the way, because you can find everything on the internet, there's a picture... here. This is a commemorative chocolate Obama head that someone pointed out looks exactly like the demons from Hush.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it does.
Obama is one of the gentlemen.
It looks delicious.
That's wonderful.
So yummy.
That's fantabulous.
Change is tasty and frightening.
Speaking of things that didn't make any sense, you were talking about structurally there's problems because, you know, she's fighting a god, you know, and whatever. The thing that always bothered me, I have long said that the single worst episode of that series was that Double Meat Palace episode,
yeah.
Which is really like the nadir of the entire. That may be the nadir of the Whedon catalog. I mean, that may be worse than anything else his name has ever been associated with. But the thing I never got about that is, I mean, that was one of those things where you want, like the writers themselves didn't bother to just step back and just to ask themselves even the basic questions about the city in which she lives. I mean, she's a slayer and essentially invulnerable to other humans. You'd figure, like, this is the best job she can get. Like, she can't get a job teaching martial arts somewhere, you know?
I mean,
you got to figure there's a lot of things you can do if you're the Slayer that aren't necessarily going to give away that you're the Slayer. They're going to be better than, you know, than slinging hash at a hamburger place. It was where, like, somebody, they were just, like... That's where you wonder if they got so behind, or if they were just if there were so many network notes, or they were juggling so, or if he, I don't know, is that when he left to do Firefly or Angel or something, and there was just nobody minding the store?
Well, there were when I was watching, like everybody watching Buffy in real time back then, and also you know being a big nerd and interacting with people on the message boards and stuff, and man, the loathing of Marty Noxon. For those last couple of seasons of
I refuse to acknowledge the last season actually happened.
Good for you. Well done.
They just too many things were undermined in the last season. I'm sorry.
The best moment of Marty Noxon's life is when she sings about getting the mustard out. That's it. Everything else she did is just a wash for me.
I'm not wearing underwear.
Okay. So here's where this all started, and then I swear to God we'll wrap up here in a moment because you got to go do Ham-Fisted. It's already 3:30 for the love of. The show needs to be longer. Never mind.
We own it. We can arrange that.
Yeah, but you got to go do a thing.
It could be longer in
general.
It's just
Anne and I looking at each other awkwardly.
Like you don't have things to talk about if I'm not here.
I was just going to say that here's the thing about that, about the Once More with Feeling episode. And I know that nobody's hands are really clean in this regard. But it always kind of bugged me that nobody ever sort of even like vaguely scolded Xander for inadvertently leading to the deaths of scores of people. You know?
Yeah.
Like he's got a whole bunch of people horribly killed, you know, and at the end he's sort of a, you know, kind of a Gabbo sort of
my
a, you know,
bad.
Bad little boy. You know, nobody went, well,
Xander.
And yeah. I think they almost literally ended that episode with sort of a kind of a, and then it just went to like the credits and there was no sort of, you know.
No, it ended with Buffy and Spike singing to each other.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Segwaying into building knocking down sex in the next episode. Yeah.
Yeah, so nobody ever like kind of took him aside and said, "Well, that wasn't very. You shouldn't have done that."
The two of the things and I love that episode so much. I actually they had a poster that they put up, UPN put out that was in all bus benches and things. I have that poster framed in my bathroom.
Wow.
But I loved two things. One, we found out that Allison Hannigan can't sing.
Right.
Neither
can Sarah Michelle Gellar, by the way.
Well, really. But they managed to fake her up a bit.
But I like the fact that they didn't they didn't replace them. They auto-tuned a little bit, but they didn't make it perfect. I mean, they still sound like real people singing.
And we also learned that, yes, they were all painfully aware of how much we hated Dawn.
Yeah.
So that was good.
All right. We should do – do we have to do the Geek Watch before we close this out?
I think we've been doing the Geek Watch.
It seemed appropriate just to – let's roll. Here's your Geek Watch for Wednesday.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to
– just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but – because we were wondering if the quantum flux – and I just listened on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energized.
By the way, if Aaron Duran were here, he would note that, you know, amazingly, all of us married. So, kids, there's hope for you, too.
We all found love.
Fools.
The PlayStation Network went offline nearly a week ago, but officials announced yesterday that user data had been compromised.
Oh, God, 77 million people, they said.
Yep. In a blog post, PlayStation responded to criticism about the delayed breach announcement, saying it took several days to understand the scope of the breach. PlayStation says about 77 million gamers are registered with the network that allows them to play games online and play against other users online. The PlayStation console also allows access to online music and movies. The personal information PlayStation says is compromised includes credit card numbers for those users who purchased online features. Major Harris, whose profile includes credit card information, said, "It has me a little nervous, but I'm thinking hackers can only do so much damage before PlayStation will take care of it."
Well, it's one of those things where you just got to hope the law of averages is in your favor. That, I mean, if there's, you know, even if there's 50 guys who stole that, there's 77 million people. So you just got to hope that they're not going to draw your name out of the hat, you know, when it comes time to
Yeah, the deadline for the network's repair is not known, but PlayStation said in an email to subscribers it's rebuilding the network with added security features. They're not commenting on who may be responsible for the breach, but said they're investigating.
All right. Is that the extent of our Geek Watch?
Yeah.
All right. I mentioned the South Park thing. Yes, that's tonight. Yep. Seriously, you get a chance. You got to watch that the trailer for tonight's South Park where Steve Jobs is unveiling the human the human scent iPad, which is just, it's so horrible. It's so off-putting, but it's, you know, but it's like, what am I going to do? Not watch? So,
so I guess right. Now I have to watch it so that we can discuss it tomorrow.
Oh, my God. And then before we, and I've been saying that a lot lately, and I got to stop doing that. But before we end the Geek Watch, we got to like, I don't know, 4% of the things. Mm-hmm. I will say this. I won't talk anymore about it because I don't actually even have the thing. But did you see the iPhone app that came out, I guess, like maybe a week ago or something, where you can just take a picture of food and it'll tell you how many calories are in it?
No.
It doesn't even seem possible. And and there was this whole discussion on CNET about like, you know, is it a gag or is it like a hoax or does it really work? And apparently it works about this. It works to about the same degree that weird Spanish to English camera thing does, which I got just because it's freaking amazing and mind blowing. So they said that it is not perfect and that it is occasionally wildly inaccurate, but that it's accurate far more often than you would imagine. And that there was a long, interesting, really like sort of panel, like a virtual, like online, a panel discussion about how the thing actually works. And does it actually go off to some sort of a headquarters somewhere where a guy like literally like looks at it and types in spaghetti 200 calories and sends it back? Because it's not instantaneous. Sometimes it takes a minute or two. And there was the company wouldn't disclose how it worked.
I like the idea that it's sponsored by McDonald's. And so if you put like a Big Mac up there, it's 100 calories.
Health food.
No saturated fat. All fiber.
It's really bizarre. I forget the name of the thing, but it's but I have some credits in the iTunes store. So I think I might actually get that because it will effectively because I was gifted some iTunes credit, so it will actually cost me nothing. So I might actually do that just to amuse myself. So I might I'll bring that in tomorrow. All right, let's close out the Geek Watch here before we.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next.
Ooh,
Alan Rickman.
Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
I'm surprised for Halloween they don't sell like Galaxy Quest costumes. You know, I mean, I don't even think I've seen anybody with a homemade one. It seems like that's money in the bank, baby. Maybe one of those. I mean, it just seems that is maybe a small audience, but 100% of the audience would be yours if you marketed a Galaxy Quest costume. And I think I speak for everybody when I would say we'd pay more than we normally would for some sort of Halloween getup.
I would buy a Alan Rickman in Galaxy Quest head to put on.
Seriously, it's that. And I love Alan Rickman in all of his many roles, you know, especially but not limited to Hans Gruber. But I mean, that moment when he does the, you know, by Grabthar's hammer, what a savings. That's the best line reading of his career ever. Anna Griffin, so you've what is coming up in the Oregonian? Are you going to be writing about the Joint Terrorism Task Force thing or are you just ruminating?
I'm actually off the rest of the week. So, you know, feel free to ignore the paper.
Okay.
No,
excellent.
No, buy the paper.
No, if you're not there, it's you are the tree in the woods. If you're not there, it's really, it's just, it's pointless.
There is no news.
So you can read her in print in the Oregonian, you know, later, or online at OregonLive.com, Anna Griffin. Be sure to join us tomorrow when our guests will include, I guess, just Don and myself. Also Friday, we'll be joined by Mr. Big Jim Willig. We want to make sure to mention that today's program is brought to you by our good friends at Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com or their brand new Facebook page, Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. And somebody asked if the electrical disasters photos were now posted. They are, and they're going to be updated on a regular basis. So if you've been feeling bad about yourself or maybe feeling like you don't quite know what end of what plugs into what in the wall when something doesn't work the way it should, you can say, well, look, at least I'm not this poor bastard here. And, you know, and like look at the guy whose whole house was sort of, you know, melted down to a plastic cube because he left his what was it? He left his laptop just charging on a couch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just left it open on the couch all night. Or the guy who like sawed through the wall and then sawed through like the wiring and then set his wall on fire.
And then was you say there was a guy who used a nail gun and he put a nail through a wire through like an electrical cable.
So basically, if you're just feeling bad about your life, like your boss like yells at you a little bit or something, you know, just go look at some of these pictures and go, well, at least I didn't burn my house down.
At least I'm not that poor bastard. So you can find out more about that at facebook.com/SquiresElectric or SquiresElectric.com. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical and contractors, installers, and supervisors, and proud sponsors of this, the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't forget to listen to Don Taylor this afternoon, 4 p.m. Pacific at Cascadia.fm for Hamfisted Radio, also at HamfistedRadio.com. And last but not least, don't forget, we are now, I don't know, 8 days away, seven? I can never figure the whole thing where it's like a thing that is a week and a day from now. So is that 7 days away?
Let's just call it a week.
It's
just
next
say a
Thursday.
Week.
It's more or less a week. Except it's not. It's actually 2 weeks. It's two Thursdays from now. It's going to be Thursday, May 12th, at the Barnes & Noble Lloyd Center. There's going to be the the official signing, reading, et cetera, for Zombie Economics. That is happening two Thursdays from now, Barnes & Noble, Lloyd Center, 7 p.m. You can find out more by going to mayofthedead.com or going to zombieeconomics.com. So the book is actually released next Tuesday, the 3rd, but the reading is going to be at Barnes & Noble, Lloyd Center, Thursday, the 12th at 7 p.m. and so forth, and et cetera, et cetera. We're done now. We'll end with some Buffy here just to sort of wrap things up as we began. Thank you for listening. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. It is Wednesday, April 27th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
I've got a theory that it's a demon, a dancing demon. Something isn't right there.
I've got a theory. Some kid is dreaming, and we're all stuck inside his wacky Broadway nightmare.
I've got a theory. We should work this out.
It's getting eerie, what's this cheery singing all about?
It could be witches, some evil witches. Which is ridiculous, cause witches, they were persecuted. Wicked, good, and love the earth and women power, and I'll be over here.
I've got a theory, it could be bunnies.
I've got a
bunnies, I'm just cute like everybody.
Maybe midgets.
I've got a theory we should work this fast.
Because it clearly could get serious before it's past.
I've got a theory, it doesn't matter. What can't we face if we're together? What's in this place that we can't weather? Apocalypse. We've all been there, the same old trips. Why should we care?
What can't we do if we get in it? We'll work it through within a minute. We have to try, we'll pay the price. It's do or die.
Hey, I've died twice.
What can't